loud, but never squelch. It will make or break him, so he's got to buy the best, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion. And when he does his little rounds round the boutiques of London town, eagerly pursuing all the latest fancy trends, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion. Oh yes he is,
oh yes he is,
oh yes he is,
oh yes he is.
Thinks he is a flower.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
United Airlines threw the glove down over pension plans, and the Machinists Union is the first to respond. The International Association of Machinists has sued the airline, claiming that it breached its fiduciary duties. The company announced earlier this month that it would no longer make payments to its four pension funds. Typically, if a company does not make those payments, it is a finable offense. However, the airline says its bankrupt status protects it. The suit, filed in U.S. District Court in Chicago, seeks to force United to keep making payments to the plans.
It was a close vote over the weekend, but for the fifth time in 15 years, the production and maintenance workers at Continental Tire North America voted down a union. Out of 1,650 eligible workers, the United Steelworkers of America lost the election by only 60 votes. Organizers, however, are encouraged because they gained over 100 more supporters than since their last attempt in November 2002.
Responding to petitions filed by shrimpers in southern states, the Bush administration has proposed imposing tariffs on imports. The duties vary from country to country and are based on each country's sales and production prices. If adopted by the Commerce Department, the duties will be placed on Brazil, India, Ecuador, and Thailand. The department has accused those four countries of dumping shrimp on American markets at artificially low prices, thereby hurting domestic shrimpers. Opponents to the tariffs say the duties will cause a spike in shrimp prices and do little to help the domestic industry. There is also a three-week-old proposal to impose similar tariffs on China and Vietnam. Those six countries combined provide 75% of the shrimp Americans consume yearly.
As part of the lead-up to the presidential elections in November, the 1.7 million strong Service Employees International Union is working to get out the vote with a coalition called America Coming Together. ACT plans to spend $125 million with an army of union volunteers in a dozen battleground states. They're hoping to tip the scales towards a John Kerry presidency and a Democratic Congress.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. HIV and AIDS is ravaging the global workforce, especially in developing countries, according to a new report from the UN's International Labor Organization. It estimates that as many as 36.5 million working people are HIV positive, and by next year, the total death toll for the global workforce since the start of the epidemic will reach 28 million people. The ILO calls the epidemic a direct threat to goals for poverty eradication and sustainable development in developing countries.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
In 2000, we had Florida's obscure Secretary of State, Catherine Harris, working to squirrel the presidential election. And now, look out, here comes another obscure GOP operative acting all squirrely about the 2004 presidential election. DeForest Soares Jr., a former New Jersey Secretary of State, was handpicked by George W. a couple of years ago to chair the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, which is supposed to assist state election officials. Instead, Soares is out to assist Bush. He sent a letter to Homeland Security Czar Tom Ridge saying that emergency authority was needed to let the Bushites cancel a presidential election in the event of a terrorist threat. Rather than hurling this misguided missive into the trash can and suggesting that Soares get professional help, Ridge is actually acting on it. He has called in John Ashcroft to determine what legal steps would be needed to suspend this fall's election. The rationalization is that evil terrorists could strike or threaten to strike the U.S. just before an election, so the Homeland Czar needs the power to cancel the balloting and schedule it for a later day or year or whenever. Now, guess who issues our color-coded warnings about terrorist threat levels? Tom Ridge. Indeed, just to punctuate his extreme request to Ashcroft, Ridge promptly issued yet another of his vague code yellow warnings that Al-Qaeda is planning a large-scale attack on America, adding darkly that this attack will be, quote, an effort to disrupt the democratic process. How convenient. If Bush is losing and needs an October surprise, Ridge could issue a code red alarm, using it to justify a postponement of the vote. This is Jim Hightower saying, if there's an actual terrorist attack, that's when Americans will most want and need a chance to vote on the officials who have failed to protect us. In no event should we ever empower the incumbents to disrupt the democratic process. I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George the W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
38%. 46%. 42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. What a great day. Did you watch last night John Kerry's speech? It was absolutely amazing. You know, they said it was a Mission Impossible. That was the...
I'm John Kerry, and I'm reporting for duty.
But he had them at hello. He absolutely nailed it last night. That was absolutely one of the best political speeches I have heard in years and years. My smallest and really most insignificant critique of it is that he had too much to say and too little time to say it. And that, tragically, was a function of the fact that the network said you got 1 hour. Yeah, we're here on the public airwaves, making use of the public space, making use of the commons, they said. But for democracy, for the idea of a full and balanced debate, for an informed populace to improve the knowledge of the voters in America, we'll give you 1 hour.
And the same for George Bush, presumably. I mean, we'll see, right? But 1 hour. Tragic. Absolutely tragic. But nonetheless, he gave a, and he, but he had a lot of really important things to say. And I was watching it, and there were a few times when the crowd was just going nuts. And had he had the time, he would have paused for 3 or 4 seconds and let them get it out. But he had to keep moving along because he had this basically 50-minute speech and basically 40 minutes to give it in, you know, with the introductions and everything else. And he had to have time for the commentators. By the way, Bernie Sanders. Normally on Friday in our first hour, we have brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders. He's in England today, so we will not be doing brunch with Bernie in this first hour. Tune in next week to hear Bernie. But instead, we're going to have clips of John. We're going to have John Kerry with us in clip. Now, before I get to, and if you'd like to call in, our number is 1-866-889-8894. The website, tomhartmann.com. You can drop into our chat room, which is already well populated with some of the finest minds in cyberspace. And, well, in fact, speaking of calls, let's just go to the lines. 1-866-889-8894. Kodak in North Durham, North Carolina is on the line. Hey, Kodak, what's up?
I'm calling to comment about the convention. It was my first convention ever watching.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, I have to say, I don't have cable, so I don't watch my TV, actually. So I had to rely on satellite radio. Fortunately, C-SPAN covered all of it.
Yeah.
And then I watched the other presentations via the Internet.
Wow.
Also,
so,
once again, on C-SPAN.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that amazing? Isn't that a tragedy? I mean, it's wonderful that Sirius Satellite Radio was there for you and you know, carrying C-SPAN, and that, you know, you had a good Internet connection, but you should have been able to watch the thing, you know,
yes,
on live television.
And when I really, the thing that interests me the most is, you know, the proponents kept on saying that we don't know John Kerry, we don't know his issues. But the delegates that spoke outlined the Democratic ticket positions and the things that they're going to put in place. So if they had aired our listeners to the convention speeches, they would have a better idea.
What these pundits were saying, Kodak, was that they are idiots. I mean, you know, there's this, we don't know John Kerry. Why don't you read his website? Why don't you look at the party platform? Look at what he said. And I mean, it's all right. What they, you know, there's this persona. There's this idea in modern infotainment pseudo-journalism that you don't portray the issues, that you portray the story of the person. You know,
right.
George Bush was kind of the dumb bumbler for a while, and then he became the head cheerleader, and now he's the, you know, whatever he is. And there's the story of the day, and the story for John Kerry was, we don't know who he is, which is nonsense. They, you know, what they're saying is they didn't want to do 15 minutes of research.
Exactly. And the other thing that I really noticed, which I heard also on C-SPAN, is that this year was the first year that they actually, that the Republicans set up a press conference during the actual Democratic convention.
I know.
To give rebuttal or answers to some of their falsehoods and some of the things in which they seem to try to pick apart. It has so much hypocrisy in it that it's almost funny when you look at some of the issues. Like they say that the terrorists hate us because they hate freedom. And if you think about that, that doesn't make
Any sense. I mean, why don't they hate Germany too? Why don't they hate France? Why don't they hate Italy? Why don't they hate? Well, you got Berlusconi there. Maybe,
yeah,
you know, if they're against
freedom. At the same time, they cut off our freedoms through the Patriot Act.
I know, it's absurd. The terrorists hate us because of our foreign policy.
Right.
I mean, it's very simple. Any idiot can figure it out, except for obviously the few idiots in the media and a few in the White House who are just totally, helplessly, hopelessly clueless. Kodak,
yeah.
Thanks for the call. One last point, because we got to move along here.
Well, it's just that, you know, you could just go on and on down the list of all the different things that they say. It just don't make any sense. And how the hypocrisy in it is the fact that like they're picking over John Kerry's war record as to whether or not he actually bled.
And he's standing up there with the 12 guys that were in the boat with him.
Right.
George Bush can't produce one person except some alcoholic who thought he was going to make some quick money by saying, yeah, I remember him. And
exactly. Yeah.
He can't produce one person who saw him when he was supposed to be just drilling, right? And
the quick last point.
Yeah.
They say that the Bush's platform is going to be based on what he's done. How can he put how can it be based on what he's done when he hasn't done anything? So I hope the Democratic Party has someone there to rebut these figures that they're probably going to use to try to advance their cause.
Yeah, I hope so, too. I hope what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Kodak, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you.
All right.
Here's 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Senator Max Cleland, the Vietnam War veteran who lost both legs and his right arm in Vietnam, gave a brilliant speech, an introduction of John Kerry, and which was not carried by the network news because the network pundits had to stand up and give we were flipping around the channels, and here's the network pundits going, well, we're not really sure who John Kerry's going to have to, he's going to have to do this, he's going to, and pontificating while Max Cleland is giving this amazing speech, and they're stepping all over it. Here is just a few seconds of it.
The Bible tells me that no greater love has a man than to lay down his life for his friends. John Kerry's fellow crewmates, the men I'm honored to share the stage with tonight, are living testimony to his leadership, his courage under fire, and his willingness to risk his life for his fellow Americans. Ladies and gentlemen, there is no greater act of patriotism than that.
Amen. Well said, Max Cleland. Thank you very much. 1-866-889-8894. Rachel in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Rachel, what are your thoughts on all this?
Hey, Tom. It's Narlodius from the chat room.
Oh,
hi. Here's a report from this morning's Santa Fe, New Mexican. Some Democrats who signed up to hear Vice President Dick Cheney speak here Saturday were refused tickets Thursday unless they signed a pledge to endorse President Bush.
Oh, you're kidding. The only way you can get in to see the Vice President of the United States is this is like Joe McCarthy, you pass a test. You've got to sign the pledge.
That's right. The measure was a security step designed to avoid a disruption which Bush campaign spokesman Dan Foley alleged Democrats were planning. Democratic Party officials denied it. Two men who sought tickets reported they were required to give name, address, phone number, email address, and driver's license number, then were presented the pledge of endorsement when they arrived to pick up the tickets Thursday.
And
how do you like that?
And this guy is the number two leader of the free world. I mean, this is why we're in trouble. This is why the United States is in trouble. This is why it is so critical, Rachel, that we get out and vote in November 2nd for John Kerry and get George Bush out of office. And, you know, up until last night, my rant, you listen to the show regularly, you hang out in the chat room, you know, my rant has been, let's get George out. Kerry might be a good guy, but let's get George out. I am convinced after watching 4 days of this convention and reading and the research that I've done, reading his website and whatnot, and looking back at his voting record and actually looking at some of the nuances, some of the reasons why he voted the way he did, that he has the potential to be another Franklin Roosevelt. He has the potential to be a truly great president. And this from a guy who voted for Ralph Nader 4 years ago. I'll tell you right up front, I voted for Ralph Nader.
Well, as underscored last night in Kerry's speech, and I didn't think this way before, but I now begin to see that fear and freedom are on two opposites of the polar scale.
That's right.
And that's really one thing that he mentioned more than once.
Yeah.
So that's good, and here's hoping the climate changes.
Amen. Well said, Narlodi. Thanks, Rachel. Thanks for calling, and thanks for hanging out in our chat room. Fear and freedom on opposite ends of the spectrum reminds me of the statement that Franklin Roosevelt made in 1936. He said, a necessitous man is not a free man. In other words, somebody who doesn't have their basic needs met, somebody who's hungry, somebody who doesn't have a job, somebody who's afraid that they might get sick and it'll wipe them out, somebody who doesn't have the ability to retire but can't work any longer because they're getting old, is not a free man. And it's so, so true. 1-866-889-8894. Kevin in Tampa, Florida on the line. Hey, Kevin, what's up? Got about a minute here.
Yeah, Tom, I just wanted to say I agreed with you 100%. That is one of the best political speeches I have ever seen.
Yeah.
Rama notwithstanding.
Yeah, right. Rama does good.
But what I'm seeing is last night Michael Brooks, the conservative journalist who... David Brooks.
Yeah.
Michael Brooks is the suit, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jim Lehrer asked him what he thought the Republicans were doing after that speech.
Mm-hmm.
And David Brooks said, changing their clothes.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and in addition to that, here in Tampa, we have two papers. One is a Republican, one's a Democratic paper.
Uh-huh.
Both of them were praising it, and the Republican paper, the Tampa Tribune,
mm-hmm.
headlines were, Kerry reporting for duty.
Yeah, yeah,
and
it's
I think that the reporters fell for it.
It was a wonderful line. It was a wonderful line. Kevin, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Ron in Tucson, Frank in Arizona. Hang on the line. We'll pick up your calls on the other side of this break. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. There's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman, available in bookstores everywhere.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm in a hurry to get things done. Oh, I rush and rush until life's no fun. All I really gotta do is live and die, but I'm in a hurry and don't know why.
Welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. John Kerry last night, the speech of his life. One of just a brilliant, classic, marvelous speech. We're going to share more clips of it with you as the day goes on. You probably heard that 3 hours before the speech, the Bush administration chose to release news that last Sunday, they didn't mention that part. It came out in today's Christian Science Monitor. Last Sunday in Pakistan, they arrested a major terrorist. And Monday went by, and Tuesday went by, and Wednesday went by, and finally on Thursday, about 3 hours before John Kerry speaks, just in time to grab the lead headline on the evening news and push Kerry off, the Bush administration says, "Hey, we got a major terrorist." This, a couple of weeks after the New Republic published an article quoting three different senior Pakistani intelligence officials saying, and I quote, "It would have been told at every level that apprehension or killing of high-value targets before the election is an absolute must." Quote. That was a quote. Here's another quote. "The last 10 days of July deadline has been given repeatedly by visitors to Islamabad and during Al-Haq's meetings in Washington." End quote. And according to an ISI official, the White House aide told Al-Haq last spring, quote, "It would be best if the arrest or killing of any high-value target were announced on 26, 27, or 28 July. The first 3 days of the Democratic National Convention in Boston. They ended up announcing it on 29 July. What a surprise. What a surprise. We have such an ethical administration. It is just so impressive. Let me take a couple calls here. Then I got a clip from John Kerry on the truth. Frank in Arizona is on the line. Hey, Frank, what's up?
Good morning, and a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Couple of things I wanted to mention. First of all, I want to say that I am energized by the speech last night. I am a former Republican. I have been upset for quite some time now, as a matter of fact, since prior to 9/11, with the current administration, the current residents in the White House. There have been a plethora of lies and misguidances that came out of the White House. But I want to comment a little bit on what Kerry did last night, which I think was astounding, with regard to locking it up so that the right wing can't twist things out of proportion.
Well, they still will, you know.
They're going to try to do that.
It's going
to
be harder.
It's going to be a lot harder. First of all, I like the way that John Kerry more or less asked for a civil dialogue with Bush and campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I think, you know, after the show on the Larry King show, one of the senators pointed out that, and I really didn't realize it till that very moment, that Kerry reclaimed the American flag.
Yeah. Oh.
For everybody in this country.
Yeah.
And he reclaimed the right to be religious and be faithful and not be on the far
right
wing.
That's right. The right to be patriotic, the right to be religious, the right to have faith, the right to have high moral values, the right to believe in the truth, the right to expect that your leaders are going to tell you the truth. He took all that stuff back.
Now, now, what I wanted to say is that I have been almost physically sick over the last couple of years because of, I'm a religious person, and because of the fact that most of the people in my church were on the far right, and I talked to them, and I talked to them, and it's like talking to a brick wall.
Yeah.
But there's coming a time, and it's getting close, where these people cannot ignore the facts, the truth that's out there.
Yeah.
And it's... truth is the way.
Yeah.
So, and lastly, I want to say on Larry King, it
very
was
quick,
amazing.
Frank. Yeah.
There was a gentleman named Tucker on there. I don't know if you know who
yeah,
he is.
Yeah, I know Tucker Carlson. Frank, we're out of time here, so I gotta wrap it at that. But thanks for the comments. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. And 1-866-889-8894. Ron and Tucson, stick around. We'll be right back. It's the Tom Hartman Program. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
United Airlines threw the glove down over pension plans, and the Machinists Union is the first to respond. The International Association of Machinists has sued the airline, claiming that it breached its fiduciary duties. The company announced earlier this month that it would no longer make payments to its four pension funds. Typically, if a company does not make those payments, it is a finable offense. However, the airline says its bankrupt status protects it. The suit, filed in U.S. District Court in Chicago, seeks to force United to keep making payments to the plans.
It was a close vote over the weekend, but for the fifth time in 15 years, the production and maintenance workers at Continental Tire North America voted down a union. Out of 1,650 eligible workers, the United Steelworkers of America lost the election by only 60 votes. Organizers, however, are encouraged because they gained over 100 more supporters than since their last attempt in November 2002.
Responding to petitions filed by shrimpers in southern states, the Bush administration has proposed imposing tariffs on imports. The duties vary from country to country and are based on each country's sales and production prices. If adopted by the Commerce Department, the duties will be placed on Brazil, India, Ecuador, and Thailand. The department has accused those four countries of dumping shrimp on American markets at artificially low prices, thereby hurting domestic shrimpers. Opponents to the tariffs say the duties will cause a spike in shrimp prices and do little to help the domestic industry. There is also a three-week-old proposal to impose similar tariffs on China and Vietnam. Those six countries combined provide 75% of the shrimp Americans consume yearly.
As part of the lead-up to the presidential elections in November, the 1.7 million strong Service Employees International Union is working to get out the vote with a coalition called America Coming Together. ACT plans to spend $125 million with an army of union volunteers in a dozen battleground states. They're hoping to tip the scales towards a John Kerry presidency and a Democratic Congress.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. HIV and AIDS is ravaging the global workforce, especially in developing countries, according to a new report from the UN's International Labor Organization. It estimates that as many as 36.5 million working people are HIV positive, and by next year, the total death toll for the global workforce since the start of the epidemic will reach 28 million people. The ILO calls the epidemic a direct threat to goals for poverty eradication and sustainable development in developing countries.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, it's a wild world, and John Kerry claims he can take care of that. Don't you worry, friends. That was just an absolutely incredible speech. I was so energized by that thing. I got to tell you, it was inspiring. 1-866-889-8894. Ron in Tucson, Arizona, on the line. Hey, Ron, thanks for hanging around there.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. If you'll give me a little bit of a format, I'd appreciate it. Last night, I'm a Vietnam veteran, era veteran. I didn't serve in Vietnam, but I served there on that 64 to 68 period.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to tell you, I watched that last night, and from the Band of Brothers to Max Cleland to John Curry, nothing but tears. And I just challenged last night, I challenged Senator John McCain to find his conscience, to find his loyalty to this country as opposed to his party, and how any GI who ever served in our military could vote for George Bush, who would only deserve it of a blanket party, and everybody who served in the military knows what that is. I challenged John McCain. I feel sorry for John McCain, and I feel sorry for Colin Powell.
Yeah, I don't think we want to inflict a blanket party on Bush, but I mean, that's, but yeah, I get your point.
You know, and this guy would have only have gotten a blanket party if he had been in that platoon.
Yeah.
He can't shine their shoes.
Yeah. Explain blanket party for our listeners.
Oh, a blanket party is when you got somebody in a barracks or in a platoon who's a real screwball, as we used to say in the Air Force, a dipshit, and they used to put a blanket over him in the middle of the night and just beat the hell out of him.
Yeah.
And that's what this clown would have gotten in that platoon.
It's a rough one. Ron, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Ed in Seattle. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Good.
I just want to say I want to thank you guys for your show. We're able to get you out here.
Yeah.
And to get...
I'll be in Grand Rapids next month. I'll be in Santa Fe. It's Portland, Oregon. I'll be speaking this fall. But not Seattle. So
great. That's a little piece from us, but that's great. I'm hoping that maybe you guys can come up here one of these days. The city would love to have you guys.
Oh, it's a beautiful city.
Up here.
Yeah, a beautiful city. A good friend of mine, David Corton, lives up there, and Paul Loeb, also a couple of writers that are right on the edge, doing great stuff. Anyhow, what's up, Ed?
Yeah, I would say I just want to echo what the earlier caller said. I mean, I was in through 71 and 72, and I went through Parris Island, South Carolina. And every time I look at this man, the so-called President George Bush, God, how I wished I could have given him a blanket party.
Yeah.
But then I'm not going to be too mean. I'm just saying, every time I look at this man, it hurts.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, we're at our wits' ends up here. He doesn't have a prayer up here.
Yeah, we have to have some compassion for George. Apparently, you know, according to Capitol Hill Blue, he's now on antidepressants to control his outbursts.
I wanted to say that I want to thank you guys for the work that you're doing, and to hear a voice out there that stands for something. And I am so proud of Obama and John Kerry that I just don't know what to do. I can just jump up and down. Finally,
yep.
You know, we're coming.
Yeah, Barack Obama gave an incredible speech. I mean, that he's going to be probably the first black candidate for the United States. For the presidency of the United States, I hope so one day.
Stay grateful. And I just want to say thank God for all you guys, and take care.
Thank you, Ed. Thanks. Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. And I'm informed that apparently Ron slipped over the edge of language there. My apologies to anybody listening if we offended you. It won't happen again. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Brian in New Jersey on the line. Your thoughts, Brian?
Hey, Tom, just real quick. Before last night, the reason I was going to vote for John Kerry was to get George Bush out of office. And now I'm going to vote for John Kerry because I really stand behind all those issues. I really didn't know much about him, and I think he laid it out very well. And I just have very much respect for somebody that would go to college for 4 years, have that much of an education, and then decide to go over to Vietnam and risk his life for my country. And so I just wanted to say that it's not about getting George Bush out anymore. For me, it's about getting Kerry in.
Yeah, he volunteered actually for two tours of duty.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. It's, and now, you know, all that said, One of the commentators last night made the comment that the last time the last four times a war hero ran as a war hero, only once did they win against an incumbent, and that was in 1848. But you know, Eisenhower ran essentially as a war hero. And really, that's really not what Kerry is running at. I think that what they were trying to do there is just say, this is who this guy is. This is where he came from. This is how his values were formed. This is his worldview. And you know, this is the starting point, because we really kind of had to start at the starting point. And the starting point in somebody's biography, as far as, you know, is he going to make a good senator, is he going to make a good president, whatever, is not, you know, well, he was born, you know, well, it may be, actually, with John Edwards, because he was born in very, very humble circumstances. But I think, by and large, his the beginning of Kerry's biography is that turning point experience for him of volunteering, going off to war, killing and watching people be killed, and then coming back and sitting before the United States Senate and saying, you know, how can you ask someone to be the last man to die for a mistake? I mean, right. It was just absolutely awesome. Anyhow, thanks for the call, Brian.
Thanks for your show.
You're welcome. 1-866-889-8894. Jared in Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, Jared, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better.
I'd like to apologize for not listening to you as much as I used to. I've been addicted to Air America lately, but
well, they do good too.
Yeah, I'd just like to comment on the Nader bashing. It really bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little off topic, but I think it deflects from the fact that the Republicans stole the last election. And I think that's a point that really needs to be made.
Yeah, well, you know, Ralph Nader makes the point, and Michael Moore, and Greg Palast, and now pretty much everybody. I mean, I've got actually the New York Times article. Right here in my hands, examining the vote, the overview. This is from the 12th of November, 2001, the article in New York Times. Now, keep in mind, this was 4 weeks after 9/11. So the New York Times had this information. And buried in the 13th paragraph is, and I'll read this, is verbatim from the New York Times front page story. The numbers reveal the flaws in Mr. Gore's post-election tactics, and in retrospect, why the Bush strategy of resisting county-by-county recounts was ultimately successful. An approach Mr. Gore and his lawyers rejected as impractical, a statewide recount, could have produced enough votes to tilt the election his way, no matter what standard was chosen to judge voter intent. In other words, what it boils down to is that if they counted every single vote in the state of Florida, no matter how they counted it, no matter what standard was used, whether it was with the Chads, without the Chads, showing intent, not showing, Gore won. And the only way that they could contort it to say Bush got the majority of the votes was saying, okay, we're only going to look at these four counties, we're only going to look at these 17 counties, we're only going to look at these 10 counties, and they had all those variations of just in a few counties. And the reason, of course, being that Gore, in the beginning, said, let's recount just these four counties. And so the Republicans jumped on that. There's no state law in Florida that says you can recount the whole state. There's no provision. And so Gore had to go to Bush and say, will you agree with me that we should recount the whole state? And Bush said, no, absolutely not. And so then Gore said, okay, well, we're gonna push to at least count as many counties as the state will count. And the Supreme Court said, well, let's count, as I recall, it was 17 counties. And then Bush sued him at the United States Supreme Court in Bush v. Gore. And I'm just amazed. I've been hearing cons recently say, well, when Gore sued Bush. No, sorry, it was Bush who sued Gore to stop the count. And they stopped the count, and on it went. So pardon the rant.
Yeah.
There. But, you know, I agree with you, Jared, that Michael Moore didn't cost Gore the election in Florida in an absolute technical sense. Gore actually won in Florida, as the New York Times reported, although they later said they buried that part of the story because they didn't want to harm Bush's legitimacy a month after 9/11. They were concerned about its impact on national unity, which is, I can understand. I don't agree with, but I can understand. But the larger issue is that in New Hampshire, for example, which would have tilted the election to Gore, 27,000 votes went to Ralph Nader. George Bush lost by fewer than a couple thousand votes, at the most 2,000 votes. So if you look at New Hampshire, Nader took the election away from Gore.
Yeah.
And several other states as well. So, you know, I think that there is some legitimate Nader bashing going on. My gripe with Ralph Nader, and as I said, I voted for him in 2000. And I still agree with everything he says about issues. I absolutely agree with that. I can't think of a single thing that Ralph Nader says about issues that I don't agree with. And I will not vote for him because I'm offended by him. because he went to my son's university and gave a speech in which he said, well, in Germany, they can have that. You can have a third party. You can have a fourth party. In Israel, they have third parties. In France, they have third parties. Why can't we have third parties? And he knows the answer to that question. In those countries, they have a different system of government. They have proportional representation, where a third party, if it gets 20% of the votes, will actually have 20% of the seats in parliament and 20% of the say in government. Whereas in the United States, if you've got a third party running for the presidency of the United States, they take away votes from the party they're closest to, and both parties then end up with no say whatsoever, and you end up with the country being run by the Republicans, who only got a minority of the votes. And that's wrong. And Ralph Nader knows that, and he's running around this country lying to people, and that offends me.
Okay.
So if I
knew you cleared up for me.
Okay, good. I'm glad. Thanks for the call, Jared. I appreciate
it. More often.
Okay,
thanks.
Great. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Bill in Austin, Texas on the line. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Well, Brian, I was going to say something else real quickly.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that Ralph Nader's Green Party has now become the Long Green Party, but I might be wrong about that.
Well, I think the Green Party's doing fine. I think Nader's going down in flames.
I think he might have sold out. Look, what a call it up about. I'm kicking a beating down here on these right-wing talking heads that predominate our radio stations, and they're really beating on Kerry's war record of all things.
Yeah.
I'd like to just read this thing from Colin Powell's autobiography. It's real short.
Yeah, I know what you're going to read. So
I'm angry that so many of the sons of the powerful and well-placed managed to wangle slots in the Army Reserve and National Guard units. Like many tragedies of Vietnam, this raw class discrimination strikes me as the most damaging to the ideal that all Americans are created equal and owe equal allegiance to their country. I'm a 25-year vet. I was in Vietnam twice. I was in Korea twice. And you know, it just astounds me that someone who's never served in the military, I'm talking about some of our radio talk host down here, can have someone like Kerry and say, oh, he stole his Purple Hearts. He went over there with a press and movie team to take pictures of himself.
He didn't go over with a movie. He took an 8mm camera with him, which a lot of soldiers do. I mean,
when you get down here, they take a little tiny splinter of a fact and they make a telephone pole out of it.
Yeah.
So they've got him making documentaries. They've got him getting Purple Hearts just so he can get back in politics.
Yeah, it's pathetic.
Sunday.
Yeah. Let me just, and Bill, that was so great. Let me just very quickly share with our listeners. Only I'm going to ramp it up a little bit. This is from page 148 of My American Journey, the autobiography of Colin Powell, currently Secretary of State of the United States. I am angry that so many of the sons of the powerful and well-placed managed to wangle slots in Reserve and National Guard units, like the Texas National Guard. Of the many tragedies of Vietnam, this raw class discrimination strikes me as the most damaging to the ideal that all Americans are created equal and owe allegiance to their country. Say it okay?
And yes, that's great. And
amen, you know, brother.
Now our friends... Guard records have disappeared, you know, got mangled in the process.
Yeah, but there's a microfilm of them in Texas, because the Texas National Guard has to hold them. However, George Bush will not sign the paper releasing his own guard records.
But there's
in Texas.
A fellow here in Texas who's been on a lot of programs. You probably heard his name, and I won't mention it now because I think he's lying low after getting beaten sort of but around the head and ears. But he watched those records being purged down here at the local level.
Oh, gee.
By a man who has now been promoted by Bush to be the Adjutant General of the entire Air Guard nationwide.
I remember when that story came out. That was 6-8 months ago. Yep.
Sir.
Yep, absolutely. Bill, thanks for
good
the call.
To you, Brian. You take care.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the call, Bill. Good to hear good to hear your comments. 1-866-889-8894. Daryl in Grand Rapids, you're live with Tom Hartman. What's up, Daryl?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to call and first say thank you for your show. It's really great to hear a voice of reason. Instead of a screaming moron.
I can scream once in a while, you know. But
pardon me.
I scream once in a while, but hopefully.
Yeah, but it's not moronic.
It's not moronic. There you go. Okay.
Yeah. I just wanted to say in '96, Clinton and Gore came and did a rally at University of Michigan in Flint, and I was there, had the chance to be, 10 feet away from them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so powerful and so wonderful, and I was just literally brought to tears. And when I watched the speech last night by John Kerry, I've had the same feeling. And I think if we can just capitalize on that, people will see that he is the man.
Yeah.
He's the man for this job.
Yeah, I hope that that speech gets played over and over again. I have a feeling it won't be. But and because, you know, only a small fraction of Americans watched that last night. And
yeah.
And that's a tragedy also. But well said, Daryl. And, you know, hopefully, you know, from your lips to God's ears, the word will get out. Thanks a lot for the call. 1-866-889-8894. Phil in Tampa, Florida is on the line. Hey, Phil, what's up? We got about a minute and a half here.
Okay, I just wondered if you all saw Fox News and the crepe hangers after Kerry's speech.
No. I couldn't tolerate it. You know, we flipped through and I saw Newt on Fox, and I know that just last week he had a meeting with the Republicans where he told them that they have to go on the wedge issues because they can't win on the real issues. And I saw his face there. I felt nauseated.
Yeah.
Honest to God, I felt nauseated, and I flipped the channel. I thought, you know, life's too short.
And what they failed to disclose is he had to quit his job because of his failure to bring in the votes the last time.
Yeah.
And here he's making predictions again.
Yeah, which may have had something to do with his telling his wife as she was dying of cancer that he was divorcing her because he was having an affair with his secretary.
They bring on the other guy who, I can't remember his name, who predicted that, first of all, that Mrs. Clinton wouldn't win the Senate race.
Yeah.
For sure she was going to be the vice presidential candidate.
They are all so bright, Phil. They all know everything.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Thanks for the call, Phil. Good to hear from you. 10 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. You are listening to the True People's Radio.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down, and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner, bringing you today's feature story. 49 New Jersey environmental groups in the Save New Jersey Coalition are urging Governor James McGreevy to veto the so-called fast-track development bill. The bill would grant developers fast approvals on building permits. Rebecca Miles reports.
The coalition claims the bill is unconstitutional as it radically changes the permitting system in New Jersey, and many see it as railroading 30 years of environmental protection. I asked Jeff Tittle, director of New Jersey's Sierra Club, what the bill would do if passed.
It allows developers and polluters to be able to have fast-track approval for permitting from DEP and other agencies, including transportation. And what it really means is that in that 45-day clock, the public has no right to comment on permits that may affect their lives and their property and their public and their health.
What many are angry about is that this comes after a long battle to get Governor McGreevy to preserve the highland area around New Jersey's state reservoirs. I asked Thomas Borden from the Rutgers Environmental Law Clinic what he saw as a typical example of how this bill would infringe people's constitutional rights.
There's many areas in New Jersey where development or redevelopment has not occurred because the area is contaminated and is under the jurisdiction of DEP to remediate that site.
What the coalition uncovered in the bill were 12 counts of violation against constitutional rights, to include threats to public health, safety, and public property. They have brought this to the attention of Governor McGreevy. The governor has 45 days to veto or pass the bill, and cannot pass a bill that is considered unconstitutional. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles in New York.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Don't worry, be happy. See, this is a campaign manager, a campaign worker for President Bush. This is from Reuters. Here's what the Bush campaign says. If you don't like the fact that the average job pays $9,000 a year less than the jobs that were lost during the Bush administration, the replacement jobs are less useful. A campaign worker for President Bush said on Thursday, American workers unhappy with low-quality jobs should find new ones or pop a Prozac. Susan Schiavone, an assistant to Bush campaign spokesman Terry Holt, this is the assistant to his spokesman for the entire campaign, said, why don't they get new jobs if they're unhappy or go on Prozac? There's a solution. That's definitely a solution. 1-866-889-8894. Jill in Michigan. What's up, Jill?
Hi. Yes, I have a question. I hear John Kerry is coming to Grand Rapids on Monday, August 2nd, and I was able to switch my hours around to work at night, and I've never seen a political speaker, and this will be the first time, and I'm so excited to go and see him, but I wasn't sure on what time he's coming to Grand Rapids to the Calder Plaza.
Ah, I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm in Vermont right now. You'd have to, if you just call the radio station on their regular line rather than this line, you're listening to WTKG, I assume, in Grand Rapids.
Right.
Yeah, just get their number out of the phone book
and
give them a call.
And the second question was, when are you going to be in Grand Rapids?
You know, it's going to be in the next few weeks, the next 4 or 5 weeks, and I don't have that right at the tip of my fingers. It's on my website. Go to tomhartman.com and just click on Tom's schedule, and it's right there.
Oh, okay, will
okay.
do.
Great. Thanks a lot, Jill. 1-866-889-8894. Matt in New Hampshire. What's up, Matt? We got about a minute.
Hey, Tom. Just wanted to make a couple quick comments. Love your show, first of all.
Thank you.
And after this convention, I just want to say, you know, I mean, it really seems clear to me the Democrats are all about hope. They're all about freedom and personal liberty. And the Republican Party, they're all about hate and fear. Mm. And I think that the voters are going to have a great time this time.
Yeah, and the tragedy, Matt, is that the Republican Party, I think, as a whole, and the majority of people in the Republican Party are really not about hate and fear. But you've got this small group of demagogic neocons who have taken over. and you know these super conservatives who take. In fact, in the next hour, the first hour of the next hour of this program, I'm going to be debating a conservative about you know whether or not we should have an FCC, and then in the third hour we're going to get back to John Kerry clips here. But it's tragic. It's really tragic for the Republican Party. Matt, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Oh, such a marvelous speech John Kerry gave last night. Stick around. We'll be getting to more clips from it. Got a couple of guests coming up. Somebody running for the United States Congress from Michigan as well in the next hour. A remarkable woman, actually. I think you're going to enjoy it. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some cranky right-wing think tank like our next guest comes from. Stick around.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
United Airlines threw the glove down over pension plans, and the Machinists Union is the first to respond. The International Association of Machinists has sued the airline, claiming that it breached its fiduciary duties. The company announced earlier this month that it would no longer make payments to its four pension funds. Typically, if a company does not make those payments, it is a finable offense. However, the airline says its bankrupt status protects it. The suit, filed in U.S. District Court in Chicago, seeks to force United to keep making payments to the plans.
It was a close vote over the weekend, but for the fifth time in 15 years, the production and maintenance workers at Continental Tire North America voted down a union. Out of 1,650 eligible workers, the United Steelworkers of America lost the election by only 60 votes. Organizers, however, are encouraged because they gained over 100 more supporters than since their last attempt in November 2002.
Responding to petitions filed by shrimpers in southern states, the Bush administration has proposed imposing tariffs on imports. The duties vary from country to country and are based on each country's sales and production prices. If adopted by the Commerce Department, the duties will be placed on Brazil, India, Ecuador, and Thailand. The department has accused those four countries of dumping shrimp on American markets at artificially low prices, thereby hurting domestic shrimpers. Opponents to the tariffs say the duties will cause a spike in shrimp prices and do little to help the domestic industry. There is also a three-week-old proposal to impose similar tariffs on China and Vietnam. Those six countries combined provide 75% of the shrimp Americans consume yearly.
As part of the lead-up to the presidential elections in November, the 1.7 million-strong Service Employees International Union is working to get out the vote with a coalition called America Coming Together. ACT plans to spend $125 million with an army of union volunteers in a dozen battleground states. They're hoping to tip the scales towards a John Kerry presidency and a Democratic Congress.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. HIV and AIDS is ravaging the global workforce, especially in developing countries, according to a new report from the UN's International Labour Organization. It estimates that as many as 36.5 million working people are HIV positive, and by next year, the total death toll for the global workforce since the start of the epidemic will reach 28 million people. The ILO calls the epidemic a direct threat to goals for poverty eradication and sustainable development in developing countries.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
See George. See George in our national parks. George knows parks are popular. George likes to go to parks and have the media take his picture there. See George run for president. In his 2000 presidential run, George W. dressed up in khakis and held a photo op in a national park where he decried the $5 billion backlog in making essential repairs to America's deteriorating park system. It's shameful, he said, promising to fix our parks. He didn't. 4 years later, the maintenance need is $6 billion. Speaking of deterioration, Bush's National Park Service announced this February that it would allow BNP Petroleum Corporation to drill for natural gas on Padre Island National Seashore. This will put pipelines, heavy equipment, and large trucks on the longest undeveloped beach in America. Just what you want to see when you go to the solace of the seashore, a drilling rig in your face. It will hurt tourism, the ecosystem, wildlife, and local businesses. Also, one oil corporation can plunder a minor gas deposit that amounts to only one day's worth of fuel for America. Then there's Georgia's effort to, quote, improve Eisenhower Public Park in Nassau County, New York. Though it's a mere county park, the White House directed county officials to make an essential addition to Eisenhower Park prior to Bush's visit there in March. He was going for a fundraiser in a restaurant in the park. Then he was going to walk to a building to meet with some families of 9/11 victims, then proceed to a groundbreaking ceremony for a 9/11 memorial to be built in the park. The new addition demanded by Bush's minions? Sidewalks along every step of Bush's trek. Newsday columnist Jimmy Breslin reports that the word came down from on high. The president's feet are not to touch the dirt. This is Jim Hightower saying, thus, concrete and asphalt were poured so George's feet would not touch the ground, as they rarely have any time in his life.
As a small business owner, doing several things all at the same time is just another day at the office. So Sam's Club offers the option of doing two things at once, buying items you need for your business while at the same time buying items you need for your home. When you shop at Sam's Club, you get the same everyday low cost on items for your home as you do on items for your business. You've got a lot going on. Count on us to help you get it done. Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George V.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast. Beaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Radio stations from California to North Carolina. Our number 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to drop into our chat room, go by dropbytomhartman.com. Should we abolish the FCC? I suspect Howard Stern might be thinking so right now.
Or maybe not. I don't know. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but should we abolish the FCC? What's the deal here? Just as I was wrapping up the last hour, by the way, we have Robert Garmon on as our guest here. He's with the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. It's .org, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. AynRand.org. And Dr. Garmon, first of all, I want to apologize to you because as I was closing up the last hour, I made a comment about cranky right-wing think tanks. And, you know, it's not nice to call people names. So I'll just... But you're with this cranky right-wing think tank, right? I'm sorry. It's a cheap shot. The Ayn Rand Institute... promoting the ideas of Ayn Rand, the author of Atlas Shrugged, the book that tells the story of the noble capitalists' victory over the stupid bureaucrats. Good summary?
Well, and I think it's really the summary that she would approve of is that it's the men of the mind triumphing over the irrational.
Okay, great. Let's talk about rational and irrational then. You're suggesting we should abolish the Federal Communications Commission, right?
Yes.
I am assuming you're familiar with the situation in Italy with Herr Berlusconi? The signor.
I know a bit about it.
Well, Mr. Berlusconi started out as a small-time crook and a small businessman. His business partner, and I say small-time crook because his business partner just 4 months ago was sent to prison for bribery of federal judges that was done in concert with Berlusconi. He has charges against him that are pending. He bought a radio station. He bought a TV station. He bought another TV station. He bought another radio station. He bought a network. At this moment, 90%, he bought a newspaper, then he bought another. 90% of all the media in Italy that people digest, that people absorb, all the print, radio, and television is owned by Silvio Berlusconi. He owns all the radio. The only television media and radio media that he doesn't own are the stations owned by the Catholic Church, the Radio Vatican, which technically is not part of Italy, and the national media, that is their equivalent of public broadcasting, which he, last month, put himself in charge of. Now, that's what happens when you have no FCC. The only reason we have three television networks in the United States is because the government limits ownership of television stations on the part of networks. How can you be opposed to that?
We don't have three networks. We have hundreds of networks. What are you talking about?
You do not have hundreds of networks broadcasting on the public airwaves. Maybe on cable systems you have hundreds of channels. But if you put an antenna on top of your house, you hook it up to a TV where you're pulling a signal off out of the free air, out of our commons, out of the airwaves that we all own in common, there are only three networks. And there would only be one network if there was no FCC.
And incidentally, there have been any number of people who did, in fact, put up antennae in their own living rooms or in their own homes and tried to broadcast. And guess what? Who is it that shuts them down? These independent-minded, small, little guy broadcasters? It's the FCC. It's not the big so-called monopolist. It's the FCC that says you cannot broadcast unless you buy a fantastically expensive license to broadcast.
Well, a friend of mine is actually...
the all-powerful state.
Well, Dr. Garmon, a friend of mine just 60 miles from here in central Vermont, over in Warren, Vermont, is opening a radio station next month. Their budget was $6,000.
It can be done.
It is routinely being done. This guy is opening a radio. There's a movement of low-power FM stations all across this country, and he's broadcasting into an entire valley that includes two cities.
Okay.
$6,000.
That's fine.
Now you've got a limited number of frequencies. I mean, I'm an old ham radio operator. I'm familiar with the electronics of this, right?
You've got
a limited number of frequencies.
You know more than I do in that case.
Okay, if you have anarchy, if you just say, well, anybody can just broadcast any frequency they want, what's going to happen is the largest and most powerful and most wealthy and strongest, as with Berlusconi in Italy, will end up jamming the signals of everybody else, and you're going to end up, again, with one man rule or one corporation rule, and you're going to have fascism.
My view is not that we should have anarchy, because I agree, anarchy is a form of statism, and that's not good. What I believe in and what I advocate is not regulation by an alphabet agency, but ownership, private property. If you go into an area where there is no one currently broadcasting, and you establish a broadcast on a certain frequency.
Well, let me just pause you right there.
Just the same way that a homesteader did in the Ohio Valley in the 1800s.
But hang on just a second. You just said if you go into an area where there's nobody currently broadcasting, first of all, there's no such area in the United States. There isn't.
There are some, as you said, but...
guy in Warren, he's broadcasting on a specific frequency. I can sit in Warren and pick up probably 20 different radio stations, so there's at least...
Right.
He has 20 competitors. But you know, if you're suggesting that if ownership is the solution, go into an area where there's nobody broadcasting, set up a signal, and start transmitting, then, it just doesn't follow.
You have no historical perspective.
Okay.
100 years ago, nobody was broadcasting,
and it was absolute chaos. They were, you know, from spark gap transmitters to the early AM transmitters. It was a mess. That's why they created the FCC.
100 years ago, there was no chaos. There was nobody broadcasting.
In the 1920s.
Right. When radio broadcasts began, and later when TV broadcasts began, you had no one on the media, and what should have happened, what didn't happen but should have happened in my view, is you go in, you set up a transmitter, you broadcast on a certain channel, and you own that channel in just the same way that a homesteader owns the land that he or she clears.
Okay, and who enforces the reality of that ownership? Don't you need an ABC?
Who enforces the reality of homestead ownership? The government. But not by an FCC. What the FCC did was to come in and say, we're not recognizing ownership. We're claiming that the government owns all the media, broadcast media in this country. The government established.
No. I'm sorry. I can't let you say that. What the government is saying is that they own the airwaves, the medium by which the media is transmitted. The government does not own any of the transmitters. They don't own any of the broadcast stations or broadcast facilities.
I don't recognize that distinction, because if you think
the government owns CBS? You think the government owns this?
The government said, as they do in Russia, you may print whatever you want, but we own all the paper, and we'll decide who gets to have paper and who doesn't, then that is not private ownership.
Well, come on.
That is government ownership.
That's a specious argument, because the government in Russia didn't just say, we own the paper. They said, we own the newspapers. The whole thing of socialism is ownership of the means of production and distribution. They owned everything. And number one. Number two, nobody's advocating that here in the United States. Nobody. Not even the wackiest people that I've ever heard of. And, I mean, there might be a few leftover communists out there, but I've never encountered any, or I haven't in 15 years anyway. And number three, if you're saying, okay, if you go into an area where there's nobody broadcasting, and you set up a station, you start broadcasting, how do you prevent somebody like Silvio Berlusconi coming in? He is now the richest man in Italy. He's a billionaire. How do you prevent somebody from like Berlusconi coming in and setting up a larger transmitting tower and just blowing you away? The only way to do it is to have an agency like the FCC. And then you say, well, I would have the government enforce that, but we shouldn't have the FCC. This is not making sense to me.
My view is that there's a radical difference between recognizing property rights and claiming government regulation power. And if the government says, you have broadcast on such and such a frequency, therefore you own that frequency, and anyone in this area cannot step on that frequency, that is not the same as regulation. What the FCC did was to come in and say, the government now owns all the airwaves, and you can use them only by permission.
That's right.
Now, imagine if instead of homesteading in this country, we had said, the government owns everything west of the Ohio River.
Here's a better example for you, Dr. Garmon. What if the government said, okay, the airwaves are something that we all, because the government in the United States of America, unlike the Soviet Union, and this is the distinction that Ayn Rand completely and utterly was clueless about, because she grew up, you know, during the Bolshevik Revolution, her father lost his business to the communists or to the Bolsheviks. She went to the university in Kiev and studied, you know, politics and economics inside the Soviet system, and then came over here and thought, oh, it's A or B, and forgot that there's C, D, E, and F. Very simply, what the government said is there is this thing that we all own. There is not a government. There is we the people collectively exerting our will and we collectively own the airwaves. And so probably a better metaphor would be the air instead of all the land west of the Mississippi. What if the government said that the government, acting on behalf of us, because the government can't say this unless we authorize it, the government said we collectively own the air. And we're going to say that Berlusconi can't set up a metal smelting factory next to your house and belch mercury into the air because it might hurt you. You'd be opposed to that too, right?
No, I would not.
How's it different?
My view is that...
How is that different from somebody broadcasting pornography on the radio or on television?
If you don't want to turn on your TV, you have the omnipotent power to leave it off.
I would say that if we were a nation with no children in it, if everybody in the United States was an adult, or if we were a nation where we knew that 100% of the time there was an adult in every house when there were kids around, maybe I would give you that argument. But it's based in a fantasy world.
Well, and I do have to say the one tiny smidgen of an argument that I accept from your side is the argument from children, because children do not have the same rights that adults do, and it is a legitimate concern to protect them from, for instance, pornography.
Mm-hmm.
However,
or violence.
I think it's very important that adults not have their rights abrogated in order to protect children.
I agree with you, and that's why I'm entirely in favor of no censorship on print media, because print media is something you can physically hold in your hand, and people decide
and
whether or not
children can't get it.
Well, they can, but you can make a decision about whether to bring print media into your house on an item by item basis. In fact, you're forced to. Whereas with television, that's not the case. We got to take a break here, but we're going to continue. We're talking to Dr. Robert Garmon of the Ayn Rand Institute, www.aynrand.org. Stick around. We'll be right back. Got a couple callers for you, too. Hang on.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee.
Visit CASCR.org.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guaranty Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, most critical of all issues facing our species, is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our story well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species."
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Got a song about
NRAND.org. And let's see, Dr. Garamone, we have a caller on the line. Dave in Humboldt County, California is on the line. Dave, your question for the good doctor?
Yes, I do. Good morning, Robert. I spent much of my life as a shrink, and I've called Tom before. I have been trying very much to analyze some of the extreme polarities we have in our views today, and perhaps you might help me to try to raise something to a level of awareness. You know, wild generalization, if I might, that there tends to be people that care a lot about other people. You hear a lot of them on this program. That's under the center of it, people that care for others who are less fortunate and such. Another grouping of people attend only towards meeting their own needs. Those two generalized groups of people, one tends much more to experience love relations of. One tends to experience a considerable void in that area. And they then try to fill that void. They try to accumulate great material wealth in lieu of
Dave,
the love.
Pardon the interruption, but what's your point?
Well, I'm rambling a bit here, yeah. But I'm thinking if there's a thought that can be offered if we're going in a direction here. If this ultra-conservative neocon group that we have right now could find a way to experience meaningful relationships, their need to acquire all the wealth of the world might be diminished some.
Okay, that's your hypothesis. Dr. Garamone, your thoughts on that?
Well, in any sense. So if I'm a part of the group that you're describing, then I demur.
Yeah. I
think this is a shallow kind of analysis. I think that wealth is a good for anyone. And I believe in the accumulation of wealth as a crucial human value. On the other hand, it is a value, and it's not selfishness if you value one sliver of life over and above all others. such that you, in fact, are sacrificing more important values.
Now, Thomas Jefferson, in his personal letters, on numerous occasions referred to the danger of individuals or corporations acquiring so much wealth that they could harm the state, that they could harm the nation, not the state as in the government, but the nation, that they would harm, they would be harmful to others.
The polis.
You reject that notion, is that correct?
Yes, I do. I think there's a radical distinction between the power of coercion and the power of persuasion, and the dollar falls under the power of persuasion.
Tell that to my insurance company. I'm serious. They've got the dollars. If I get sick, I need, if God forbid, I need a heart surgery or something, I need a $250,000. I don't have it. My insurance company has it. They've got the power of life or death over me. That's not power.
Okay. But you chose that insurance company, you or your employer.
Because I had no other choices.
You in concert.
Because I had no other choices.
Surely you had some other choice. You could have not been insured. You could have self-insured.
Sure, I could
die. You could
have
with another company.
I could die. That's my other choice. And
incidentally, the insurance companies are vastly more regulated than any other companies in this in this nation.
I agree with you, especially
so
here in Vermont.
It's a very nice shibboleth for the left to take on that industry that is under the thumb of the government and use it as an attack on capitalism.
No, okay, good point. Good point, Dr. Garmon. We're out of time here. I want to thank you so much for being with us today. Again, www.ayanrand to read Dr. Robert Garmon's writings. And thank you again for joining us.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Hope to have you on again. 29 minutes past the hour.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
United Airlines threw the glove down over pension plans, and the Machinists Union is the first to respond. The International Association of Machinists has sued the airline, claiming that it breached its fiduciary duties. The company announced earlier this month that it would no longer make payments to its four pension funds. Typically, if a company does not make those payments, it is a finable offense. However, the airline says its bankrupt status protects it. The suit, filed in U.S. District Court in Chicago, seeks to force United to keep making payments to the plans.
It was a close vote over the weekend, but for the fifth time in 15 years, the production and maintenance workers at Continental Tire North America voted down a union. Out of 1,650 eligible workers, the United Steelworkers of America lost the election by only 60 votes. Organizers, however, are encouraged because they gained over 100 more supporters than since their last attempt in November 2002.
Responding to petitions filed by shrimpers in southern states, the Bush administration has proposed imposing tariffs on imports. The duties vary from country to country and are based on each country's sales and production prices. If adopted by the Commerce Department, the duties will be placed on Brazil, India, Ecuador, and Thailand. The department has accused those four countries of dumping shrimp on American markets at artificially low prices, thereby hurting domestic shrimpers. Opponents to the tariffs say the duties will cause a spike in shrimp prices and do little to help the domestic industry. There is also a three-week-old proposal to impose similar tariffs on China and Vietnam. Those six countries combined provide 75% of the shrimp Americans consume yearly.
As part of the lead-up to the presidential elections in November, the 1.7 million strong Service Employees International Union is working to get out the vote with a coalition called America Coming Together. ACT plans to spend $125 million with an army of union volunteers in a dozen battleground states. They're hoping to tip the scales towards a John Kerry presidency and a Democratic Congress.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. HIV and AIDS is ravaging the global workforce, especially in developing countries, according to a new report from the UN's International Labor Organization. It estimates that as many as 36.5 million working people are HIV positive, and by next year, the total death toll for the global workforce since the start of the epidemic will reach 28 million people. The ILO calls the epidemic a direct threat to goals for poverty eradication and sustainable development in developing countries.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
My bills are all due, and the babies need shoes, but I'm busted.
Ouch.
Cotton is down to a quarter a pound, and I'm busted.
This is a song, see, that came out from the populist era.
I got a cow that went dry, and a hen that won't lay. A big stack of bills that get bigger each day.
Back when the middle class was the agricultural middle class in America. Kind of got wiped out by the Industrial Revolution in the United States. Johnny Cash there. Welcome back. 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, and also two of our affiliates are in the great state of Michigan, and I believe both of them are either in or near the 7th District of Michigan, the 7th Congressional District, which will provide to the United States a congressperson this year. And I wanted to get on Sharon Rainier. Sharon Rainier is running for the United States Congress as a Democrat for the 7th District of Michigan. And Sharon, you embody, or at least what I know of you, tells me that, and maybe you can set me straight here, but I think that I'm right. You embody what I have been advocating on this program for the 2 years we've been doing this particular program, and that is that people who hold progressive views, people who hold a clear view of how this country should be, what we can do to fix things, go out and get involved and get involved in the major parties, infiltrate them, take them over, be part of them, and get out there and do it. You've done that, right?
Well, thank you, Tom, so much, and hello, everybody out there. Yes, we are doing that, and we are making an impact, and people are noticing our race. We're not the people in the race with the most amount of money, and I think that says a lot about our economy and about the situation that people are in right now. And yes, I am a very progressive candidate. I want to look at how we can make things better for everybody, not just 1% of the population.
Yeah, that's marvelous. And the money problem in politics, in Arizona and Maine, or maybe it's New Mexico, I forget, it's one of those southwestern states, and Maine, they have passed laws where if you can get 5,000 signatures, you can get state funding. And they call them clean elections. And now, just average people are going into politics in these two states, and there's a couple of other states that are picking this up. Vermont's about halfway there. We've moved about halfway into that sort of thing. It's producing a renaissance. I'm assuming that you have some ore in the water there, or whatever the right metaphor is, with regard to campaign finance reform and changes in how we handle our elections.
Right. Well, what we're doing is something a little bit different. The finance reform was certainly a step in the right direction, but we're going to try to prove this year that it doesn't take money to win an election, that it really takes the voters. And I think that the voters are upset enough, especially here in the state of Michigan. Our jobs have certainly gone everywhere but stayed here in the state. And the working class people are tired, and they're tired of, pretty soon we've almost don't have a middle class anymore. With benefits fleeing the plants, plant closings, we have a whole new arena of homeless in America. In the 7th Congressional District just here, a few months ago, there were 8 pages of home foreclosures in the local papers, and that was an all-time record high, and it hadn't been that high since back in the 30s during the Great Depression. So things are really, really bad here, and people are looking for progressive candidates who are going to stand up for them. And you're not traditional candidates. I'm a mother. I'm a woman. That's definitely not a traditional candidate in Congress, but it's someone who needs to have a voice in Congress and someone who needs to be heard. And I think that I bring a different perspective to the seat and a lot of compassion that we haven't had here in the 7th Congressional District for a long time.
Now, are you running a primary next week? Is there an election coming up?
Absolutely. I have a primary on Tuesday. I'm running against two Democrats who technically don't really live in the district. One is an admitted carpetbagger who lives in Oakland County, which is an hour or two outside of the district, and the other gentleman just moved in from New York. So
you got challenges both within and without.
It's kind of interesting to see, you know, these people jumping in on the bandwagon like this for this seat and trying to compete against someone who has actually lived here their whole life.
There you go. We're talking with Sharon Ranier, who's running for the United States Congress. And Sharon, I've got a couple of questions for you about things like single payer health care and genetically modified foods and stuff like that. But before we get to that, I know that we have a caller who actually he called during the break before you came on and had a question about John Kerry and enforcement of the Sherman Act at the federal level. And if I'll let him ask the question, Dave.
I don't know if I know anything about the Sherman Act.
Well, the Sherman.
Somebody might have to give me a briefing here.
Sure, I'd be
but
glad
I'll
to do that.
I'll see if I can answer it.
Doug, 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Doug in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is on the line. Doug, you had a question. You can toss it out there, and between Sharon and I, maybe we can take it on.
Well, I'm not necessarily for John Kerry just himself, if he gets elected as president, but the Democratic Party in general. Carter was the last one to enforce the Sherman Antitrust Act, and that's what took apart AT&T.
That's right.
To get apart. So I'm just wondering if the Democratic Party has anywhere on their platform whatsoever the enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act.
Oh, I can tell you that they don't. They don't.
Yeah, and I know what you're talking about when they were trying to break up the monopoly. So I think it was the Bell Systems initially.
It was AT&T was the last
were so
one.
Big, and they were like throughout every single state, and they didn't want somebody to have major control over, say, all the TV stations or all the radio stations or all the communications. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe that's what that was in regards to.
Absolutely right. And thanks, Doug, for raising the issue. Yeah, Sharon, what happened was in 1881, as the Standard Oil Combine was, we were seeing the railroads, we were seeing the first corporations that were so large and so powerful that they could corrupt politics, and that they
could
take control or power over the lives of the people who lived in areas that they controlled. They basically behaved like feudal lords rather than, you know, like the business down the street. And so Senator Sherman, in December of 1881, proposed the Sherman Antitrust Act, which said that it is a felony to create a trust, a combine, a monopoly. And Jimmy Carter was the last president of the United States to seriously enforce that thing. And Reagan came in, stopped enforcing of it, and that led to the mergers and acquisitions.
Deregulation and
the frenzy.
The airline, the air traffic controllers, and a whole host of other can of worms, too. And I believe now that the media is actually kind of controlled by, from what I understand, just a few families, and I'm not really sure if that's a good thing.
Yeah, depending on how you parse it, somewhere between 9 and 15 corporations control about 85 to 90% of what all Americans see, hear, and read. Single-payer health care. Why would anybody in Michigan be in favor of what the Republicans call incorrectly, socialized medicine or Canadian-style medicine, why would that be a good thing?
Well, you know, single-payer health care is so very important, and it's so vital to so many people. Look at the effects that it would have. You have women and children who are in abusive situations right now because they need health care benefits. You have people getting married for the wrong reasons, and I'm just not talking about gay and lesbian relationships. We have straight people who are getting married so that they can have benefits. We have seniors with the prescription drug dinner debacle. I mean, you know, which do we have tonight? Do we have a hot dog or do we have our pill? And in the first place, most of our seniors are over-medicated. If you had a single-payer health care system, you would have people that weren't necessarily so tied to dead-end jobs. People would be more willing to take a chance of going to another employer to do a job that they really love, but the benefits just weren't there, or even taking the opportunity to start their own business. And if we take
might that be why corporations are not excited about this?
Well, good for them. They should have to compete for these jobs and make these jobs so that people are are going to want to do them. But this is a reason why the corporations should be in favor of this. It takes corporations and businesses out of the healthcare business.
Yeah.
And you and I both know that these benefits cost a tremendous amount of money.
Yes.
And it costs the corporations a lot of money. This is a win-win situation for everybody. And this is how you pay for it. The solution is so simple. Right now, most people don't realize that there is a cap on Social Security. That is, if you make over $89,700 a year, they no longer take Social Security out of your check. Well, most people don't know that because they've never made that much money. Hmm. They have that much money going back into
so
their paycheck.
So if I make $1 million a year, I don't have to pay payroll tax, Social Security tax, and unemployment tax. I don't have to pay payroll tax on anything except the first roughly $90,000.
That's right.
And so the other $999,000.
And millions and millions more. If you realize that our CEOs make 485 times more than the lowest paid person in the plant, that is just not right. We have a lot of people in this country who are not paying their fair share of rent.
Well, they're prospering. I mean, they're benefiting from this.
You know
nation.
What? I'd be prospering, too.
And,
I'd be
yeah.
prospering really well, too. What we have to make sure that all of our citizens have the right to prosper. I can't imagine why somebody would not want a healthy employee on their staff. And I can't understand why. Now, it just makes so much sense. But they don't want you to know. At the top 1%, 1% of the people make 99% of the money. You and I'm only assuming that you're in this class with me, you and I and everyone else out there split 1%.
Yeah.
Now, this is a tax that would only affect 1% of the population, but it would benefit 100% of the population.
Yeah. And
it would keep our jobs more competitive here, our corporations more competitive. Maybe those jobs could stay here and compete because that's one of the reasons that they're going overseas. They don't have to pay health care benefits.
Sure, and Alan Greenspan is on record as saying that he believes that his job as the head of the Fed is to keep unemployment high enough, not low enough, but high enough to produce a level of worker insecurity. So whenever he raises interest rates, it increases unemployment, and because it slows down the economy, to keep unemployment high enough that there is a certain level of worker insecurity sufficient that there won't be what he refers to as wage inflation, which means, you know, wages going up. It's okay if CEO pay goes up. It's okay if corporate profits go up, but the wages of working people are not supposed to go up in his
world view. Absolutely. Now, here's a perfect example. And I'm going to age myself here. I'm 48. When I first got out of school and started working as a legal secretary, we were making about $10 an hour. The lawyers were billing at about $100 an hour, and a bag of groceries for all that you could fit into a bag of groceries was about $5. Now, attorneys are billing at $300 to $500 an hour. All that you can put into a bag of groceries is between $60 and $100 an hour. Yet the entry-level position for a legal secretary is still $10 an hour. Now tell me, why have my wages not gone up?
Yeah, what's wrong with this picture? Well, haven't gone up because of the Reagan Revolution, because the cons
because they don't want
over.
Them to go up. You know, trickle down, all it ever felt like to me was urine.
Yeah, trickle down.
down economics, the voodoo economics, whatever you want to call it, from the Bush administration or the Reagan administration. It doesn't trickle down. These people just pad their bank accounts bigger and bigger. And like I said, if you took Bill Gates' salary and taxed the Social Security on that.
Hmm.
My gosh.
Yeah, it would.
You might
actually
have seniors. And people think, well, look at what the Canadian healthcare system is. You know what? They love their healthcare system. I think initially you had so many people who weren't able to go to the doctors that you had a rush on doctors, and pretty soon you had people that, heaven forbid, weren't used to standing in line and having to take a number with everyone else. But thank God they were rich enough to be able to come to this great country and get good medical care. And they don't have to wait for prescription drugs. Now, if their system was so bad, how come our American citizens are going over there to get the drugs?
Yeah, I mean, you in Michigan live on the border with Canada. It's a very small piece of the northern Upper Peninsula and the over at Windsor in Detroit. I live an hour and a half south of the Canadian border here in central Vermont. And I can tell you, there is no, and there has not been in the years that I've lived here, and there wasn't in the years that I lived in Michigan. I have never seen a huge outpouring of people from Canada coming to the United States looking for medical care. care. However,
right.
Here in the state of Vermont, every week there are buses that are chartered full of senior citizens that go up to Canada to buy pharmaceuticals. And, you know, it's tragic. It's tragic. So, okay, you're going to do something about this, Sharon. You're running for the 7th District House seat, the United States Congress, House of Representatives. And how can people find Sharon Rainier, and how can people find more information about you if they want to participate, they want to get on the bandwagon, they want to vote for you in the primary on Tuesday? You have a website?
Certainly. It's Rainier4Rep.com, and it's R-E-N as in Nancy, I-E-R. And then the number 4, don't spell out the word for it, just the number 4, and then REP.com, so okay. Rainier4Rep.com. And really, people, look at the real issues that we're talking about here. I hunt, so I'm not going to take people's guns away. I want people to look at the real issues in this election. Is your family hurting? Are you really better off? What do you think? Do you feel safer in this country? I sure don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's talk about the real issues and what our government's done for us and what it has not done.
Yeah, isn't it amazing when you think that Pearl Harbor was in the summer of 1941. The Normandy invasion was... No, wait a minute. Do I have this backwards? One was in December and the other was in the summer, and I'm mixing it up. But anyhow, one was in 1941, and the other was in 1944, the Normandy invasion.
Mm-hmm.
And So we've got 3 years separate from the time that we were hit at Pearl Harbor until the time that we basically began the final push to take out Hitler. And in those 3 years, we were very, very active. I mean, we had everything from Victory Gardens to even Rosie the Riveter, everything else. And for 3 years, what has George Bush been doing to secure the homeland of the United States? Well, we attacked a country that didn't attack us. I mean, that's like, you know, we get attacked by Pearl Harbor, so what do? Let's attack Mexico!
And I'm so glad that you have your facts straight on that, Tom, because so many people are forgetting that they're two different people in two different countries, so it's great that you bring that up.
It is. Sharon Rainier, thank you so much for being with us today. I wish you the best of luck in your primary on Tuesday. Let us know what happened.
Well, Tom, thank you so much. And everybody, go out there and visit that website and learn a little bit more
there
about
There you go. Rainier
for
Rep.
For your area.
Yep. R-E-N-I-E-R, number 4, REP.com. Thanks, Sharon. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Mega media giant Clear Channel Communications refused to allow an anti-war group to buy space on a billboard in Times Square during the Republican National Convention through Election Day. But public pressure forced Clear Channel to finally accept an ad showing a giant peace dove and a ticker displaying the cost of the war in Iraq in dollars. The 150-foot-long sign will be displayed at Broadway and 42nd Street. WIN correspondent Rebecca Mott reports.
Project Billboard, an anti-war group based in California and interested in encouraging public debate, filed a lawsuit against Clear Channel Communications alleging breach of contract. What is at stake is a billboard advertisement that Project Billboard contracted to run with Clear Channel. The advertisement featured a red, white, blue character of a bomb with the caption, "Democracy is better taught by example, not by war." Clear Channel rejected the first advertisement, saying they were not going to run bomb copy in New York City. Project Billboard then replaced the bomb image with a red and white blue dove, accompanied by the same words, but this was also rejected. They claimed that Clear Channel had suggested that the billboard be an image of a little girl waving a flag. Clear Channel Communications is one of the nation's largest media companies with close ties to National Republicans. I asked Deborah Rappaport, founder of the Project Billboard, whether she thought the debate had begun, as Clear Channel Communications' rejection of the billboard had started a flurry of debate in television and newspaper stories.
This was never our intent to get into any sort of a fight like this. We're not unhappy that our message is getting out, but we would be many, many, many times happier if it were getting out in the mode that we had chosen.
We put a call into Clear Channel Communications for comment, but it by news broadcast had no response. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles in New York.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Woo!
Yeah!
Don't you know, baby?
Now that's bumper music.
Don't you know, baby?
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you.
Don't you know,
4.5
baby?
Minutes before the hour. Yes, it's true. The assistant to Terry Holt, Susan Schiavone. Terry Holt, the official spokesman for the Bush campaign. His assistant said that if American workers are unhappy with the fact that the jobs that are being created in America pay, on average, $9,000 a year less than the jobs that were lost during Bush's reign of error, they should take Prozac. Honest to God, it's Reuters. It's in the. It's you can in your local newspaper today. She says, why don't they go get new jobs if they're unhappy or go on Prozac? Yes, indeed. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Paul in Eureka, California is on the line. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, I just wanted to point out a point that I think often gets lost, and that's the correlation between slavery and economic policy. And the economic policies of Milton Friedman and Frederick von Hayek, the conservative models have already been tried in the United States during the Confederacy.
Yeah, it's called slavery. I mean, and now we're just exporting that. We're saying we still want slaves. We just don't want to have to look them in the face. We'd rather somebody else looks them in the face on our behalf, and we'll pay them a little bit of money, and they can go to China and have slaves there.
It's no accident that Lincoln and the forces in the Republican Party that moved to end slavery implemented protectionism.
Yeah.
And try to create, like as you phrase it, the rules of the game in which you could have an economy without the kind of degradation to the labor force that occurred during the Confederate period under the Southern oligarchy.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And the big challenge we have, Paul, is how can we get the Democratic Party to figure this out in a big way? Now, it looks like they're getting it. But, you know, and there's a lot of Democrats who clearly get it. You know, Dennis Kucinich understands this stuff and many others. But there are a few who don't. How do we help them get it?
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing I think that's...
No, it's a serious question. Do you have a solution?
Well, I mean, all I could do is try to point out the history and the economics of it. You know, I mean, that's all I could do.
Yeah.
I mean, to the best of my knowledge.
Sure. Well, and do it with your friends and do it with your politicians and contact your local elected officials or even like Sharon, you know, run for office. Maybe you should, Paul.
Okay.
Yeah, you got a good mind there. I'm impressed.
All right. Thanks
for the call. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Next hour, we're going to get back into John Kerry. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, The Pill That Will Help You Escape the Matrix. Are you going to take the red one or the green one? Or maybe the red, white, and blue one. That sounds best to me. Stick around.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
United Airlines threw the glove down over pension plans, and the Machinists Union is the first to respond. The International Association of Machinists has sued the airline, claiming that it breached its fiduciary duties. The company announced earlier this month that it would no longer make payments to its four pension funds. Typically, if a company does not make those payments, it is a finable offense. However, the airline says its bankrupt status protects it. The suit, filed in U.S. District Court in Chicago, seeks to force United to keep making payments to the plans.
It was a close vote over the weekend, but for the fifth time in 15 years, the production and maintenance workers at Continental Tire North America voted down a union. Out of 1,650 eligible workers, the United Steelworkers of America lost the election by only 60 votes. Organizers, however, are encouraged because they gained over 100 more supporters than since their last attempt in November 2002.
Responding to petitions filed by shrimpers in southern states, the Bush administration has proposed imposing tariffs on imports. The duties vary from country to country and are based on each country's sales and production prices. If adopted by the Commerce Department, the duties will be placed on Brazil, India, Ecuador, and Thailand. The department has accused those four countries of dumping shrimp on American markets at artificially low prices, thereby hurting domestic shrimpers. Opponents to the tariffs say the duties will cause a spike in shrimp prices and do little to help the domestic industry. There is also a three-week-old proposal to impose similar tariffs on China and Vietnam. Those six countries combined provide 75% of the shrimp Americans consume yearly.
As part of the lead-up to the presidential elections in November, the 1.7 million strong Service Employees International Union is working to get out the vote with a coalition called America Coming Together. ACT plans to spend $125 million with an army of union volunteers in a dozen battleground states. They're hoping to tip the scales towards a John Kerry presidency and a Democratic Congress.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. HIV and AIDS is ravaging the global workforce, especially in developing countries, according to a new report from the UN's International Labor Organization. It estimates that as many as 36.5 million working people are HIV positive, and by next year, the total death toll for the global workforce since the start of the epidemic will reach 28 million people. The ILO calls the epidemic a direct threat to goals for poverty eradication and sustainable development in developing countries.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Good news, Americans. The Crawford Five are free. As I reported to you earlier this year, five Texans were victims of one of the most bizarre incidents in George W.'s ongoing autocratic assault on America's most basic liberty, the right to dissent and protest. With a hardy troop of about 100 others, these five citizens were on their way to a peaceful war protest at Bush's ranchette outside the town of Crawford, Texas. As their car caravan proceeded through Crawford to get to George's place, however, they were halted by an impromptu police barricade erected by Chief Donnie Tidmore. The chief told the group they could not protest in Crawford because they had no permit. "But wait," they said, "we don't plan to protest here in town. We're just passing through." They might as well have tried reasoning with a rock wall, for Tidmore was impervious to logic, saying that by driving cars containing protest signs into his town, they were engaged in a de facto demonstration. And he reminded them firmly, they had no permit for that. It was Catch-22 meets Barney Fife. Five of the group tried to talk sense to Donnie, but he was having none of it. So they were arrested, jailed, and later convicted by a Crawford jury for failing to obey Tidmore's order for them to turn around and leave town. Apparently, in Bush world, we the people have the constitutional right to assembly and free speech, but not the right to pass through Crawford to exercise those rights. But the Crawford Five refused to give in to the ludicrous law of Bush world, preferring the freedom-loving mandates laid down by America's founders. So they appealed. Gloriously, just after July 4th, the McLennan County judge presiding over the appeal dismissed all charges against the five and restored our First Amendment rights to their proper preeminent place. This is Jim Hightower saying, stay vigilant, Americans. The forces of ignorance and arrogance are always out there to repress our liberties.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told. If you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. The Internal Revenue Service has some words for us. Well, some information, some factoids, some statistics. Really a startling little bit of data, detail. The Internal Revenue Service just out with a new report. I'll give you the summary from the New York Times, David K. Johnson's article in yesterday's New York Times. The overall income Americans reported to the government shrank for two consecutive years. Now you say, wait a minute, shrank? The overall income of Americans? I thought the idea was we want our children to do better than us, that things are always getting better and better. Well, actually, that's how it has been in the United States for as long as the Internal Revenue Service has been in business. Until recently. Yep. Seriously. To quote the New York Times, the first time that has effectively happened since the modern tax system was introduced. The only other time since World War II that the IRS reported an interruption in income gains was from 1947 to 1949, but that was because of changes in the tax law at the time that affected how income was reported rather than an actual fall. But from 2000 to 2002, individual income taxes fell 18.8%. And the gross income on tax returns fell 5.1%, which when you adjust for population growth is 5.7%. And if you adjust it for inflation, which is the only way to have really real numbers, the average income of the average American, well, actually, the income of all Americans, fell 9.2% between the time George Bush came into office and the end of 2002. Aren't you, the unprecedented back-to-back declines in reported incomes, says the New York Times, was caused primarily by the combination of a big fall in the stock market and the erosion of jobs and wages in well-paying industries. Gee, tell us something we don't know. In the past, overall personal income rose from 1 year to the next with relentless monotony. Wouldn't you love some monotony back? The growth rate changing in response to fluctuations in economic activity, but almost never falling. Other than the Great Depression and today. Well, you're not going to find the Bushies telling you about this or talking about this by and large, which raises, you know, the whole issue of telling the truth, economic truth. As John Kerry pointed out in his speech last night, which I have to say I thought was one of the most brilliant political speeches I have heard in my life, he said,
"We're not finished. The journey isn't complete. The march isn't over. The promise isn't perfected. Tonight, we're setting out again, and together we're going to write the next great chapter of America's story. We have it in our power to change the world, but only if we're true to our ideals. And that starts by telling the truth to the American people."
And the crowd goes wild. He goes on to say his first pledge.
"President, that is my first pledge to you tonight. As president, I will restore trust and credibility to the White House."
Thank God. It is so needed. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to call in, be on the program. Your thoughts on the day's news. What happened in Pakistan on Sunday? The Pakistanis arrested a terror suspect. Now, this is interesting because about a month ago, the New Republic ran an article in which they quoted three different members of the Pakistani intelligence service as saying that the Bush administration had been over there in Pakistan earlier in the year saying that you better catch an HVT, a high value target. An HVT. You better catch an HVT soon. An official who works for this from the article in the New Republic, an official who works, written by Spencer Ackerman,
an official who works under ISI's director, Lieutenant General Ehsan El Haq, informed the New Republic that the Pakistanis, quote, have been told at every level that apprehension or killing of high-value targets before the election is an absolute must. What's more, this source claims that the Bush administration officials have told their Pakistani counterparts that they have a date in mind for announcing this achievement. Keep in mind, this was published a month ago. And I quote, the last 10 days of July deadline has been given repeatedly by visitors to Islamabad and during Al Huck's meetings in Washington. Al Huq, the director of ISI, their equivalent of the CIA. According to this ISI official, and a White House aide told Al Huq last spring, quote, it would be best if the arrest or killing of any high-value target were announced on 26, 27, or 28 July, end quote. So we busted a terrorist on Sunday, and didn't make the news on Monday, didn't make the news on Tuesday, didn't make the news on Wednesday, and finally, 3 hours before John Kerry gives his speech, John Ashcroft decides to tell America, hey, we've got a terrorist! These guys are so corrupt. It is tragic. It is just tragic. And they're trying so hard to do their Machiavellian routine, you know. The ends justify the means. Manipulate the people. Get the con talk show hosts with their talking points. Attack the person, not the issue. Newt Gingrich meeting with Republicans last week saying, you know, we've got three wedge issues here that poll more than 80% of Americans. Let's talk about the school prayer. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about raising the work standards for welfare. Why? Because the wedge issues, wedges being things that divide people, the wedge issues will divide the American electorate and make it easier for the Republicans to have electoral victories. Tragic. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Christopher in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, what's up?
You know, I have to agree with something you said in the first hour, Mr. Hartman. I was originally planning on voting for Kerry because it was an anything but Bush.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. After last night's speech, I did a lot of research on websites and what have you. And you know something? This man's a patriot, and he is... I've always been a Green, but this guy, he's good.
He's solid. Good. And you look back at the reality of his voting record, not the
well, exactly.
BS.
He's been
consistent.
I can't believe I got fooled by the spin. I would have never thought in 60 years of life on this planet that I would have gotten fooled by the spin, but I did.
Well, here's
and
what
I did the research, and I've been lied to. And this guy is my kind of guy.
Yeah, and here's what should have given away the spin, Christopher. And here we are, you and me, and probably a lot of other people in America, going, how could I have fallen for this nonsense from the right wing? They say, on the one hand, John Kerry has been all over the issues. He flip-flops. He votes this way and that way, right? That's the line that they've been promoting in their advertising.
And it's amazing because if you really look...
Well, let me finish this,
sure,
Christopher.
Sure.
So they say that, and they get people going, okay, yeah, he's all over the place. He's not consistent. He doesn't have a single position. He doesn't have a clear vision of what a worldview and what he wants. And then at the same time, now they say that in their commercials, right? They buy time. They spent $80 million so far telling Americans that message. Now, at the same time, they get their talking heads going on shows saying he's the most liberal member of the Senate. Now, if you're the most liberal member of the Senate, you must have been consistently voting in a particular way.
Well, exactly. You got it, Tom. And you know something? It's just, I am so glad that this is coming out the way it is, and I got to take a bright view of the fact that the media is dissing him and ignoring him, because there's grassroots movement everywhere across this nation, and all these Republicans are doing, well, Republicans and neocons are doing, is digging themselves into a deeper grave.
Yeah. Yeah, well, from your lips to God's ears, now, metaphorically, of course,
yeah,
let us hope that in November of this year, that integrity and honesty, or credibility, I guess, trust and credibility were the words that Kerry used. He said he's going to restore trust and credibility to the White House.
You know, Tom, it's really one last thing. It's just 2 days ago or 3 days ago, listening to Mr. Obama, it's nice to know that there's going to be a new generation of incredibly, incredibly valuable Americans in politics.
Yeah, yeah. Well said, Christopher. Thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8894. Another Chris, also in the state of New Mexico. Interesting. Hey, Chris, what are the odds on that?
The liberal Christophers are a growing block in this country, and we're going to take over. We have good news, of course. We find out today the debt that Bush is going to saddle us with is less than projected. Apparently, he's only going to spend $445 billion of our children's money this year, which is a good thing, I think. Yeah. You know.
I mentioned this yesterday. Maybe you missed it, but it bears repeating. The spin on this thing was preset in the spring. They came out in the spring and they said, you know, the deficit's going to be $520 billion or $517 or whatever they projected. And at the time, the Congressional Budget Office was saying, no, it's going to be around $447 billion. And they said, no, the deficit's going to be over $500 billion. And the Wall Street Journal wrote the obligatory op-ed saying, you know, that's terrible. We shouldn't have such a high deficit. And everybody reported it. And now the deficit is over $400 billion. And of course, it's higher than the over $300 billion deficit last year. It's the highest deficit in the history of the United States.
Yep.
It represents more money than all the money spent from George Washington through Abraham Lincoln all the way after Woodrow Wilson. It is mind-boggling. We are now in debt in this country to the point where,
I agree. I find myself listening to right-wing radio today largely for comic relief. You know, how are the cons going to respond to the last 3 days, especially last night? I keep trying to envision an energetic, animated Dick Cheney, and the pictures... It's kind of grotesque.
Well, the way they're going to respond,
jitterbugging crocodile or something.
Yeah, the way they're going to respond to it, Chris, is very straightforward. They're going to attack the messenger. They're going to say, "Oh, John Kerry, he had 12 people up on the platform there who were with him in the Swift boat in Vietnam. He had a guy on that platform who was on another boat in the same river, another lieutenant who had his boat had been hit and he fell into the water and the boats had left and John Kerry saw him in the water and there was rounds shooting into the water from the shore and Kerry turned his boat around and went back." As his boat was being hit by bullets, he's pulling this guy out of the water, and the cons are going to say, "Nah, he's not a war hero. Ain't the case. Don't worry, he ain't a war hero." It's just going to be the if you can't beat him on the issues, then tear him to shreds as a human being. And I think Americans are just sick of it. I think we've seen enough. We know what's going on. Come on, we're up to your game, Karl Rove. We know. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least five firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The festival was over and the boys were all planning for a fall.
Your festival's over, Bush.
The cabaret was quiet except for the drilling in the wall.
But the debris is left over.
The curtain had been lifted and
according to Business Week, published yesterday, the United States is entering this new age of empire with a gross federal debt that is the highest in more than 50 years as a percentage of gross domestic product for fiscal 2005. That is the biggest since we fought the World War, right? For fiscal 2005, which begins in October, the U.S. gross federal debt is projected to be $8.1 trillion or 67.5%. of gross domestic product. Isn't that mind-boggling? By the time 100,000 U.S. troops were in Vietnam in 1965, it was 46.9% and falling. 67.5% of gross domestic product is U.S. federal debt. Two-thirds of everything that is produced in the United States, an amount equivalent to that, we have borrowed from the world, and someday we'll have to pay back. It's truly mind-boggling. I mean, is it just absolutely truly mind? We need a secret agent. Yes. Well, they said it was a Mission Impossible.
I'm John Kerry, and I'm reporting for duty.
But he had them at hello. Yeah, it's a. Maybe a politician can actually pull us out of the hole that another politician has put us into. It has actually happened before. Roosevelt got us out of Hoover's depression. 1-866-889-8894. David in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, David, what's up?
Well, I have a comment on media manipulation, the Bush crony-controlled press. You had a guest on your show the other day that used the phrase, said Iraq had slipped from the front pages or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Well, I read a great article on the smirkingchimp.com the other day that was talking about a new talking point that's been put out, and it's called now that stabilization is underway in Iraq, or now that stabilization is happening, he said, look for this phrase. And he said, what are you talking about, stabilization? He said, we've had 79 guys killed in the month of July with 10 days to go. That's, so far, that's the seventh worst month. And then he listed a lot of other things, too.
Yeah, well, you see, the truth never quite got in the way for these folks. I mean, it's just the truth never got in the way. That's interesting, the new talking points. And on Smirking Chimp, ask not for whom the chimp smirks. He smirks for you. their slogan. David, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Tim's on the line. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Well, hi. I'm so hopeful after watching the past few days and just really appreciate your show. One of the things that I've been looking for, and I haven't seen anything, is any new polls that have come out today. And one of the things that I heard, Michael Moore and Ralph Nader both said this on how the poll spinners spin, is that they use the word likely voters.
Mm-hmm.
And that only, 50% of the population that can vote do vote.
Mm-hmm.
And so does that leave, 50% that are actually undecided and not just 10%?
Well, theoretically. The small problem that you have, however, Paul, or Tim, is that in most states, I believe in all states, but I may be wrong, but certainly in most states, the majority of states, perhaps all, you have to register to vote. And there is a time period. Like, it's too late right now, I believe, here in Vermont to register to vote. I may be wrong. Maybe it's the next month. But every state has a different time period. And so when you get right down to the election, there's a lot of people who don't vote and haven't bothered to register, who then cannot vote, which I think is wrong, by the way, but it's just, it's the way it's done. It goes back to the days when records were kept on paper and you had to have time to check that this person was actually, really there and all that kind of stuff.
Well, so that's kind of my point. As I know here in New Mexico, they still are taking voter registration applications
good.
For the fall.
Good.
And that, we need to get, those people that aren't voting register and get to the polls. But one of the spins I'm hearing the whole thing is that, there's such a small amount of people that are undecided.
Now, we've got to get out there and get them, Tim. You got to talk to your friends, talk to your neighbors, talk to your relatives. Get them registered. Get them out there to vote. November 2nd, we can turn this thing around. 29 minutes past the hour.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
United Airlines threw the glove down over pension plans, and the Machinist Union is the first to respond. The International Association of Machinists has sued the airline, claiming that it breached its fiduciary duties. The company announced earlier this month that it would no longer make payments to its four pension funds. Typically, if a company does not make those payments, it is a finable offense. However, the airline says its bankrupt status protects it. The suit, filed in U.S. District Court in Chicago, seeks to force United to keep making payments to the plans.
It was a close vote over the weekend, but for the fifth time in 15 years, the production and maintenance workers at Continental Tire North America voted down a union. Out of 1,650 eligible workers, the United Steelworkers of America lost the election by only 60 votes. Organizers, however, are encouraged because they gained over 100 more supporters than since their last attempt in November 2002.
Responding to petitions filed by shrimpers in southern states, the Bush administration has proposed imposing tariffs on imports. The duties vary from country to country and are based on each country's sales and production prices. If adopted by the Commerce Department, the duties will be placed on Brazil, India, Ecuador, and Thailand. The department has accused those four countries of dumping shrimp on American markets at artificially low prices, thereby hurting domestic shrimpers. Opponents to the tariffs say the duties will cause a spike in shrimp prices and do little to help the domestic industry. There is also a three-week-old proposal to impose similar tariffs on China and Vietnam. Those six countries combined provide 75% of the shrimp Americans consume yearly.
As part of the lead-up to the presidential elections in November, the 1.7 million strong Service Employees International Union is working to get out the vote with a coalition called America Coming Together. ACT plans to spend $125 million with an army of union volunteers in a dozen battleground states. They're hoping to tip the scales towards a John Kerry presidency and a Democratic Congress.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. HIV and AIDS is ravaging the global workforce, especially in developing countries, according to a new report from the UN's International Labor Organization. It estimates that as many as 36.5 million working people are HIV positive, and by next year, the total death toll for the global workforce since the start of the epidemic will reach 28 million people. The ILO calls the epidemic a direct threat to goals for poverty eradication and sustainable development in developing countries.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I'm feeling great. 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. The IRS says Americans' income shrank for two consecutive years, a total inflation adjusted of 9.2%. That means you're making about a tenth less than you did when George Bush came into power. Now, this is truly tragic. Do you know how many taxpayers have an income of over $10 million? Total number? It was 11,215 in 2000. In 2002, it was down to 5,280. But those 5,280 people earned $110 billion last year. $110 billion split up among 5,280 people. You think we don't have royalty in the United States? We don't have people who live literally in another world? With the gold-plated bathroom faucets in their private jets. 1-866-889-8894. Ellen in West Virginia on the line. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. And you?
Well, you just delight me.
Well,
you
thank
make
you.
My day.
Thank you. Bless
and
you.
I would like to say, Patrick Leahy ought to be very proud of himself.
He's a good
Wasn't
man.
Wasn't that some speech?
Yeah, I didn't see his speech. I'm sorry.
He came right back to tell everybody that maybe the vice president would like to turn the TV set off because he was there to speak, you know?
Oh,
and
my.
I thought that was terrific. I mean, we have to defend ourselves.
Yes, yes.
And that's what patriotism is all about.
You know, I met Pat Leahy a couple of weeks after Dick Cheney said that to him. There was a small group of, here in Vermont, there was a family with a fairly large house invited, I don't know, 40, 50 some odd people over for a Kerry kind of event, you know. And Pat Leahy was there. And in fact, he was sort of the star of the show, you know, him and Bernie Sanders. And he got up and he gave a talk. It was just casual, just hanging out and talking with friends, but or you know the voters, I guess you'd say. And
I like him.
His
He's
constituents.
Very good man. He's been their senator a long time.
Yep.
And
he said that he said when Cheney said that to him, he didn't have a comeback because he was so taken aback. He was just he said in 30 years in politics or however long it is, he's never he wouldn't ever have even imagined that anybody would speak like that on the floor of the Senate. I mean,
that is the people's house, and that was wrong. And I can't imagine a vice president of the United States desecrating the Senate floor. And it really boiled me over.
Yeah, yeah. It's.
And I would like to say, that I loved Bill Richardson. He did a good job.
Yeah.
And New Mexico people, I love him.
Yeah, Bill Richardson gave a great speech.
I would like to tell you one thing, that the speech, it was wonderful that Kerry gave.
Yeah.
And I was so proud of him.
Yes.
And I heard a speech today. The president didn't waste any time on his campaign in Missouri. And if the people will catch C-SPAN, they will repeat that film. He's telling us that we are going to have our retirement privatized, in his own little words.
Yeah.
Just listen to him closely.
Oh, yeah.
And the retirement and the pensions are going to be at stake. The people better wake up.
Yeah, and you know, Ellen, in the 2000 cycle, when George Bush was running for president, the group that gave him the largest percentage of his income was the oil industry. And, of course, he came out of the oil industry. Cheney came out of the oil industry. Condoleezza Rice has an oil tanker named after her.
I mean, absolutely.
Speak of being in the oil industry.
Really,
right?
Really.
And
that would be something to see with her name on it.
There you go. And their payback was Iraq. You know, here we have 10% of the world's oil. I mean, the largest, what is probably the largest oil supply on Earth, and certainly is the second largest. And now they've got the oil that they want. They've got the environmental regulations rolled back, and they've got, you know, the Dirty Skies Initiative. And all, the oil industry's gotten most of what they want. They still want Alaska, and Bush promises them another 4 years they'll get that. But the group that is giving him the largest campaign donations now is the financial sector, banks,
Tom,
the brokerage houses.
Thing. We need this state of West Virginia out of the red.
And
please,
into the,
dear
yeah,
God,
how can you how can you have
hear us about Social Security, please, or we will have nothing left. People cannot work. People cannot pay for their own health insurance, and that's what he stated today. Please watch C-SPAN. Please
yeah.
listen to his speech. Listen to what he's saying. He wants the people to take care of themselves. We put into that, and we saved for that, and he's going to rob us of it if we don't do something. Tom, thank you so much.
I appreciate talking with you. Ellen, I have a quick question for you before you go.
Okay.
How can West Virginia have a senator like Robert Byrd? He is from West Virginia, is he not?
Absolutely.
How can you have a senator like Robert Byrd, who is one of the, regardless
one of
what
grandest.
He did, when he, yeah, regardless of what he did as a kid, he is one of the most powerful, ethical, insightful, true to his beliefs,
he's
human
true
beings.
To the Constitution, Tom.
Yes, absolutely. How can West Virginia have a man like that as a senator and be a red state? I don't understand.
The problems are happening because we're being undermined, and if we don't wake up, it's going to be stolen away from us.
Yeah.
And I thank you again. I enjoy your show.
You're welcome.
You're tremendous.
Thank you, Ellen, for calling. I appreciate it, and thanks for listening to us there. 20 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman program. Roy in Rio Rancho is on the line. Rio Rancho, New Mexico. We're back to New Mexico. What's up, Roy?
Hey, back to New Mexico. I mean, we're so popular, Cheney's going to come see us tomorrow.
Yeah, really? And you have to sign a loyalty oath. You have to sign a loyalty oath in order to go see him.
Right, right. And I don't know that I'm going to go out and protest, because I would go to jail before I went to the First Amendment zone, and I'm not sure that I want to go to jail yet.
So they're setting up one of these so-called free speech. They're setting up a Guantanamo-style prison camp there nearby, huh?
I would assume so.
Yeah. Well, they always do, so it's a safe bet.
They always do. Actually, Ellen made a point. It just dawned on me as she was talking. You know, I only took 2 years of college accounting, but I remember that when they said being in the red, that meant that you were broke, you were overdrawn.
Is that what those
red states mean?
There you go, Roy.
I'd forgotten all about that.
There you go.
And actually, the reason that I called was, and I'm going to butcher his name, Barack
Obama.
Obama.
Yeah.
He started the analogy of the red states, blue states. I've got friends here in these red states that are this and what.
Yeah.
And Kerry closed the loop last night when he said, there are no red states and blue states. It's the red, white, and
Blue states of America. Yep. Amen. Well said, Roy.
I thought it was just pretty
In fact, it's a great segue. Thanks for the call on that. I appreciate it. Let's go back to Mr. Kerry here.
Commander-in-Chief who will...
Let me just start that over. We hear it right.
There will be a commander-in-chief
who will never mislead us into war. I will have a vice president who will not conduct secret meetings with polluters to rewrite our environmental laws. I will have a secretary of defense who will listen to the advice of the military leaders, and I will appoint an attorney general who will uphold the Constitution of the United States.
Of the United States. Clips aren't always perfect. Just absolutely an electrifying speech. This was an extraordinary speech. He talked about, you know, one of the things that the cons have been trying so hard to do is frame arguments in black and white terms. And you know, are you in favor of finishing the task in Iraq or cutting and running? Well, how about a third option, George? How about you know, fixing the country with say 30 other countries, 40 other? Well, you say you've got a coalition of 40. Yes, with Albania with their 32 members and Moldova with their 40 people, and you know, come on. So Kerry comes along and he says, "I see things as complex." And I really don't think he was trying to say that he has an IQ higher than George Bush's, although it's obvious that that's the case. But really what he was espousing was not intellect, but worldview. Carl Jung, the famous psychologist, pointed out once that a small percentage of people, he assumed it might be 10 or 20%. The Myers-Briggs psychology tests now indicate that probably actually is around 10 or 20% of the people, are what he called judgers. And they always boil everything down to two polar opposites, black or white. It's either this way or that way, and there is no gray area. There's nothing in between. And then the other 80, 90% of us are what are called perceivers, Carl Jung, using Carl Jung's language. And perceivers understand that there is a middle ground that has as much validity and reality as the polar extremes. And in fact, the history of the United States is that from the founding of our country until just the last 3 years, we have pretty much gone down the middle ground. And in fact, even when extremists came along, like Ronald Reagan with his trickle-down economics, which is an extreme experiment that threw this nation nearly into bankruptcy, Reagan's first tax cut was so bad he had to raise taxes the following 6 years, every single year for 6 years, and George H.W. Bush also had to raise taxes just to keep the country from going down the tubes because of the tax cut, which is what George W. is setting up right now, an absolute disaster. In fact, the Wall Street Journal ran an article, I shared it on this program back last winter, in which they said that the GOP was pursuing what they called the Santa Claus strategy. We give you gifts. Here's this tax cut. Here's a gift. And then, you know, the GOP isn't always in power. And then when they leave power, the Democrats come in and they have to clean up. They have to say, hey, I'm sorry, we've got to pay the bills. You know, you can't live on your credit cards forever. And they're getting deeper and deeper and deeper. So anyhow, let me just come back here to John Kerry talking about seeing the world in complex terms. What does that mean?
There are those who criticize me for seeing complexities, and I do, because some issues just aren't all that simple. Saying there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq doesn't make it so. Saying we can fight a war on the cheap doesn't make it so. And proclaiming mission accomplished certainly doesn't make it so.
Yeah, well said. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number, by the way. I just want to give you the flip side of this. Well, actually, let me just have John Kerry talk about his thoughts about what we should do in Iraq. You know,
I know what we have to do in Iraq. We need a president who has the credibility to bring our allies to our side and share the burden, reduce the cost to American taxpayers, reduce the risk to American soldiers. That's the right way to get the job done and bring our troops home.
Amen. Well said. 1-866-889-8894.
Defended this country as a young man.
Okay.
And I will defend it as president.
Good one, John. Thank you. I wasn't expecting that one. It's excellent, excellent. The juxtaposition. On the one hand, we've got today's New York Times. The adjusted for inflation, the income of all Americans fell 9.2% from 2000 to 2002. And then we've got an article on CNN's Money page, Money Magazine, The CEOs at the nation's largest companies saw their raises more than doubled in 2003 as the median raise handed out by S&P 500 companies to their top executives was 22.18%. Most elements of the pay, base salary, annual bonuses, restricted stock options, long-term incentive payout, value realized from stock options, and total compensations all showed increases. The statement from the group said the double-digit rise in pay shows that calls for pay restraint appear to be being ignored. Four S&P 500 companies upped their CEO pay by over 1,000%. The compensation for all CEOs, a total sample of 1,429 companies, showed median pay increases of 15% for the year 2003, up from 9% increases in 2002. Welcome to the wonderful world of conservative economics. 1-866-889-8894. Chuck in Los Alamos is on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Hey, Tom. You know, it's, one of the things I think that we don't pay enough attention to as well is that something also that Ronald Reagan did was create the political soundbite. This guy was a master at not giving speech, not giving the full information, but just creating those 30 and 40 second soundbites. And I think that what we're seeing here is a little bit in the Democratic process, a return, at least in some of the things I've heard in the last few days, a return to actually people saying what they mean and going into some detail about that.
Yeah, saying what they mean and meaning what they say.
Meaning what they say, absolutely.
You really get it that John Kerry is about absolutely that. There's no silly nonsense. Amazingly ethical,
and that was the thing that really struck me in listening to this. You could tell he really, really, really believed what he said.
Yeah, well said. Thank you very much for the call. I do appreciate it, Chuck. Here's Gary. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I just have to share a real quick cartoon with you. It was the best cartoon I think I've seen for a long time. It shows Tim Russert interviewing John Kerry, and he says, Mr. Kerry, is light a particle or a wave? And John Kerry says, well, Tim, really, the answer to that is very complex. Under certain very specialized circumstances, it can behave as a wave, and in other circumstances, it can behave as a particle. And the
which is true.
Were all, oh, yeah, John Kerry, he just can't make up his mind, can't figure out if it's a wave or a particle. Then in the next frame, it shows interviewing George Bush, and he says, well, Mr. Bush, would you please spell cat for me? And Bush kind of hum-haws around and, well, you really should have given me that question ahead of time, but how about K-A-T? And then all the pundits are smiling and, well, you know, he wasn't right, but he was very close. And, you know, we just have to have a man who knows what he believes and says it. And it was the funniest cartoon I've seen in years.
It is funny, but don't you think also that it's tragic?
Oh, it is. It is absolutely tragic.
Gary,
They used to say that Ronald Reagan's knowledge you put on 3.5x5 cards and Bill Clinton's you put on CD-ROMs. Yeah. It's kind of the same kind of contrast there.
Yeah. Well, at least Ronald Reagan had charisma.
That's true, yeah.
Although he did tremendous harm to this country. He did some good things, but economically he devastated us. And,
yeah, absolutely.
Anyhow, thanks for the call, Gary. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Our number 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
The founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis: poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Children who get lots of exercise risk poor health if they breathe polluted air. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Couch potatoes are in some ways healthier than kids who play soccer, run, or participate in other outdoor sports if they live in areas with high levels of air pollution. Kent Bransford is a medical doctor and a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility, an advocacy group. He cites a recent study of children living in Southern California.
What they did is take children all growing up in the same bad air area, and then they divided them into two groups. One group, very active, playing outside like we probably want our kids to do. So if they were in three or more sports during the year, they were in the active group. And then the other half of the kids were living in the same area but more sedentary, so inside playing with their Game Boys and PlayStations, etc.
Bransford says the results were surprising.
What was very worrisome is that the children that were outside, active, playing, breathing a lot of air, which children do more so for their body weight than adults, they had about a threefold increase risk of developing asthma compared to the kids who were not as active.
Another recent study looked at California college freshmen. It focused on students who had similar activity levels but compared where they grew up. Bransford says those from Southern California, where smog levels are highest, had more lung disorders than kids from Northern California, where the air is better.
Those college freshmen had decreased lung function studies at age 18, purely related on where they grew up and the air they breathe.
Bransford says air pollution can cause health problems that might last a lifetime. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
In the good old USA, I'm proud to say, we got brand new action, good old fashioned too.
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour. Our program brought to you today by the Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research, www.cascr.org. Benjamin Krim, futurist, 888-242-8272. Got to fix that ad. That last two got cut off. And Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX. 1-800-511-MACS.
Look at me. Where's love?
Welcome back, my friends. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Jeffrey in Denver is on the line. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to make a comment about Carrie the flip-flopper. I've kind of gotten really worn out on that. It reminds me of Monty Python's Burning the Witch scene.
Mm.
But I just wanted to state that... 4 years ago, my wife and I supported George Bush, and now we're definitely voting for Kerry. So I guess I'm a flip-flopper, too.
How do you, Jeff, can you figure out how can you be a flip-flopper and at the same time be the most conservative member of the Senate or the most liberal member of the Senate? I mean, if you were to pick the most extreme conservatives, conservative and the most liberal, and try to accuse either one of them of being a flip-flopper, don't you think the American people would say, hey, how is that possible?
But see, the mentality is very simple. All you have to do is just come up with some stupid saying, and then people start repeating it, and you don't have to think about it then. You can just repeat it.
Yeah.
And so flip-flopper is real easy to say. So.
Yeah.
But it shows the mentality that's going into this. And, you know, intelligence allows for a change of mind.
Yeah. I agree, Jeff. Let me just share one last, and thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. One last little bit from John Kerry here.
I don't wear my religion on my...
Here we go.
...my sleeve, but faith has given me values and hope to live by from Vietnam to this day, from Sunday to Sunday. I don't want to claim that God is on our side. As Abraham Lincoln told us, I want to pray humbly that we are on God's side.
Another great line. And I remember, you know, Abe Lincoln, I mean, I don't remember him saying that, but certainly I've read the quote before and thought, that's a great one. Shelby points out, George Bush didn't stay up last night to watch... Kerry's speech. It was past his bedtime, so Karl Rove watched it and read it to him. No, I'm serious. Serious. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Ira for engineering it. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us around the planet. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to the folks in our chat room, to Jay for our music, and thanks to you for listening. Makes it all possible. Do appreciate it. See you on Monday. Have a great weekend. Shabbat shalom, TGIF, whatever it is. Do good.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo